there, Frederick. What you doing? Oh, hello, brother of mine. Why, I'm just studying for a math test tomorrow. That's pretty neat, Frederick. Braxton, brother, shouldn't you also be studying for the test? Well, you see, Frederick, due to my high levels of apathy and the stress of knowing that I'll never be good at math, I've decided to completely give up on even trying to do good on the test.
So, what are you gonna do instead?
Oh, I'm just gonna go watch some YouTube videos.
School sucks! Especially math! Ugh!
When will I ever use geometry / trigonometry / calculus in the real world?
I think you're only saying that because you're bad at geometry / trigonometry / calculus. Why is everyone so quick to hate on math? Math is easy. How many essays did you have to write for math class? Oh, that's right. E to the I pi plus 1. Which is 0.
One thing I would change about math class is I think it's dumb that you have to show your work.
Ugh!
Do you know how much harder it is to cheat when you have to show your work?
Dear math, solve your own problems, tweeted MatPat.
I hate Matt, replied Protato Gamer. Hey, that's not very nice of you, Prote. All he did was tweet about math.
Maybe what you really hate is spelling. Or maybe you really do hate MatPat.
Well, two can play at this game. When will I ever need to know about the themes and symbolisms in To Kill a Mockingbird when I go into the real world?
That's right, never!
You don't need to know anything to be in the real world.
Okay, I think we can all agree that a lot of what school teaches you isn't that important. And there's definitely more important things schools could be teaching you, like taxes or how to pick a good president. But I'm not the one who makes the curriculum, so why am I even talking about it?
Regardless of how broken your education system is, you should always stay in school, kids. Right, Dave?
I was a good student in school, not counting college. And look how I turned out. I'm not using everything I learned in school almost every day. Sure, you'll probably never need to know that much about Shakespeare's plays. But hey, now you know how to read old-timey complicated books. And no, you'll probably never have to find the area under a curve ever. But now you can say that you can. And isn't that what life's all about?
So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my school stories.
What do you mean Jaden already made a video on school stories?
Did she call them school stories?
I already stole from her like 2 videos ago.
Okay, just, I'll think of something.
So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my academy anecdotes.
So you know how guys can pee standing up? It's amazing. Ladies, if you've never peed standing up, then you're missing out. But there are some rules that apply with having the superpower. Like, don't go to a urinal right next to another guy unless it's absolutely necessary. Or, if the urinals don't have a divider, then everyone can all agree to keep your eyes and mind straight. These rules have been taught to us at a very young age. By the time we were in elementary school, we were all pros at peeing. Except for some of us when we were asleep. But that's not important. So at this point in life, we all should have known what we were doing. But there is this one kid who I guess no one ever taught him how to pee correctly. This kid, I'm not going to say his race because it doesn't matter, but when he went to the bathroom, he would pull his pants and underwear all the way down to the ground. Some of the ladies watching this might be thinking, wait, is that not how guys pee? Ladies, you'll just have to trust me on this, but that is the most wrong way a person can pee. The first time I saw the kid doing this was when I was in the urinal right next to him.
Pee faster!
As us two bros were peeing, a third bro walked into the bathroom, saw this kid's bottom, and just went, ooh, and walked out of the bathroom. I wish I could have done the same.
How do you tell someone, hey man, when you pee like that, everyone can see your butt. So just,
here, let me show you how to do it.
I don't know what happened to that kid, but I think he would agree with me that math is easy. He was Asian.
When I was little, I had a very weird sense of humor. So in the 5th grade, there was this girl I'd known for a long time. We weren't strangers or anything. And one day I said to her, you have 2 big blue zits right there. And I pointed at her eyes. I was talking about her eyes. I called her eyes zits. Get it? She, immediately slapped me. Probably because the joke was so awful.
And that was the first time I ever got slapped by someone who wasn't a family member.
And yes, it was Priscilla, the girl I sat next to in the cardboard boat video. She claims that the slap was an accident and that she was just trying to fake slap me to scare me. But I think she was really just self-conscious about her eyesits. One time, my 6th grade teacher, who was the same height as all of us, threw a stapler across the room because we wouldn't stop talking.
Here's an anecdote about the first time I got detention. And it isn't that exciting. I was in the 7th grade and our class was at a computer lab. And the kid sitting next to me, his race doesn't matter, so I'm not going to say it.
Asian, kept changing the computer wallpapers to cats, and he kept showing me. To be fair, I thought what he was doing was hilarious. Then I asked him, can you change the background to Chuck Norris?
That just goes to show you how long ago this story took place.
He showed me what he did, I laughed, but then the teacher said, who's changing the wallpapers? She was able to see everyone's screens from her computer, and the kid said, me and James were.
Dude, don't bring me into this! You were the one changing the wallpapers! I mean, I was involved a little, but don't drag me down with you!
We ended up getting detention, except my school didn't call it detention, they called it CARE, which I'm sure was an acronym for something. If it wasn't an acronym, that would have been a weird thing to call detention. Let's just say it stood for... Kids Are Really Extra. The whole time I was in CARE, I kept thinking in my head, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. If they see you cry, you might as well move to China.
And that was the only time I got detention. Except it wasn't called detention. So I still have a clean record.
All right, here's the last anecdote. This one happened when I was in the 11th grade. I was in an AP US history class, and I had it for a 0 hour. So that meant I was at the class before school even started, and I was way too tired to learn about presidents. I was sitting in class when all of a sudden I sneezed very loudly. And it was an above average sneeze, like one of those sneezes where you had to lean into it. And after I sneezed, this kid near me said, hey yo, Mr. Teacher, can we get some tissues? This boy's got a bloody nose. And I thought, oh shoot, I do? Well, that sneeze was pretty violent, and I did pick my nose a few minutes ago. And then the teacher looked right at me and said, oh yeah, you can just go to the bathroom. So I got up, and as I was walking to the door, I felt my face and realized, wait a minute, I don't have a bloody nose. I turned around, and there was a kid who actually did have a bloody nose walking towards me. I'm not gonna say the race of the kid because it doesn't matter. Canadian, but I was in a pretty awkward situation. So I punched myself until I actually did get a bloody nose. Nah, I'm just kidding. What I really did was I said out loud, I have to go to the bathroom too. And then I left. I didn't really have to go to the bathroom. I didn't want to see another exposed butt anyway, so I just waited outside awkwardly for a long time. I got an A in that class, by the way, if you were wondering. I still don't use anything I learned in that class.
So me and TJ had to sleep a whole night in the axe-smelling tent. Every breath I could taste the smell, and I just got more and more angry. The night finally passed, and I woke up early in the morning before everyone else, so I could start with my master revenge plan. Was I tired? Maybe. But that's a sacrifice you have to make for vengeance. Every campsite had a water fountain coming out of the ground, connected to a PVC pipe. I found the biggest Ziploc freezer bag I could find and started to fill it up with water. It was obviously a slow process. I had plenty of time to reconsider, to think about what TJ said or what would happen after I got my revenge. But nothing stopped me. I was a squeaky-voiced, hormone-induced monster. Once the bag was full, I went back to my tent and woke TJ up. He got up and I told him to watch this. TJ actually had no part in the revenge plan. I just wanted to suck him down with me. I think TJ actually didn't want to get revenge. I ran towards the mega log tent and hid behind a real tent that was right next to the log one. Everyone was still inside. TJ still had no clue what I was doing. Until I chucked the bag over the real tent. If everything went according to plan, the bag would break on the roof and the water would sink through the openings, and then they'd be super wet, LOL. That was the plan. I never saw the carnage my creation had done. I was worried that I'd completely miss the log tent. I never played any sports as a kid, so just making it over the first tent would have been an accomplishment. But the fact that everyone started screaming and one boy yelled, Micah, I'm gonna kill you! I knew it must have been the most perfect shot. Did I stay around and laugh at their stupid, guilty faces? No. Me and TJ ran away as fast as we possibly could, without looking back. We sprinted off into the woods before any 15-year-old saw us. We just kept running and running, making sure to get as far away from camp as possible. And on the way, I kinda threw up a little. TJ, being the good friend that he was, thought I was unfit to run, so he decided that we should hide in some bushes. After about 5 minutes, nobody came.
Should we head back to camp? No. Yeah, you're right.
So we kept running, until we found the lake where scouts could canoe in. Me and TJ both thought this was a good place to stop, so we sat by the lake and talked for a few hours. Because in a week, TJ and his family were going to move away to China for 2 years, and I knew I wouldn't see him again for a long time, so I wanted to spend every moment I had with him. We were just a couple of bros being real with each other, skipping rocks and talking about our feelings. And then that night, the 15-year-old's tent got axe-bombed. So I guess it wasn't them. Oh, and remember how I threw up after running so much? Well, apparently there was a sickness going around camp that all the camp instructors got, and about 50% of the scouts got it too. And lo and behold, one of the 15-year-olds wasn't feeling so well when he went to bed that night. And then the sudden jolt awake and the cold water made him throw up.
Yay!
I don't know if any of you guys had to do this in high school, but in my high school, you had to take a physical education credit to graduate. So normally, to get it out of the way, in 9th grade, all the boys would take PE, and all the girls would take dance. But sometimes, the really white boys would take dance. And you could always point them out during dance recitals. So I actually took PE my sophomore year because I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade. But that was okay because I fit in quite perfectly with all the other skinny white boys. And there's like this long moment in the first 10 minutes of class where all you do is sit in the locker room and wait until coach says, "Okay, let's do this!" So one day we all got bored and just started flicking water bottle caps. You know, just the caps and the little whoop-ah! We just started flicking, you know, like little tiny frisbees. We took caps from the trash and we would just whoop-poo! Shoot them at each other, you know? Whoop-ah! And it was all fun, you know, and no one really got hurt, and I'm pretty sure I'm the one who started it, but whatever. And then, when we did our physical education class, it was, like, extra hard. Like, we ran 2 laps instead of 1. And we had to do wall sits while holding medicine balls. And then afterwards, when we were all sweaty and tired, the teacher goes, "You want to know why today was extra hard? It's because you're flicking water bottle caps at each other."
What?
Fast forward a couple, I don't know, a month, and these two kids get the idea to play a game called Bodies. And if you aren't familiar with that game, it's a game where you punch someone, that's it. You're not allowed to hit their face though, just their bodies. Which is why it's called Bodies. And you'd think at least one of us would be like, hey you guys. Oh wait, their voices should be squeaky. Hey you guys, coach didn't like that we were throwing water bottle caps before. Maybe we shouldn't do this. So, you know, I obviously couldn't let that happen without watching. And these two kids start playing, and one kid isn't even punching back, which is a strategy I would not use playing that particular game. And then all of a sudden, the dude taking the punches falls off his feet and hits his head on the hard tile and doesn't get up. Did I win? So we're a couple of young bros, and we're like, "Hey, bro. 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 Bro." So we had to tell the teacher, and the teacher got the nurse, and a little time passed, and at that point he did wake up a little. And the coach asked him what happened. And he knew he would get in trouble if he told the truth. So he lied and said,
I don't know, I just passed out and got all these punch marks.
Although it is possible he could have legitimately forgot. And then the coach asked the class what happened. And everyone was like, "Oh yeah, geez man, yeah, he just passed out. Yeah, I saw him, he just flopped down." And we almost got away with it, except one kid, I forget his first name, but his last name was like for Wilkins or something. Ugh, and he had the stupidest bowl cut too. Ow, so stupid. He tells the coach, they were playing Bodies, and person A falcon punched person B. And then we already know we're in a whole heck of a trouble. But the nurse called the PE teacher and said, "This kid needs to get his stuff." And coach said to the class, "Someone needs to get this kid his stuff." "I got it! I'll get his stuff."
And I'm told that the class had to do lunges down the track field. But I wouldn't know, because I took my sweet time getting him his stuff. And then a year later, I heard our PE teacher got fired. For separate reasons.
My name's Joe Exotic. I exploit dangerous wild animals for profit, and that's only the least reprehensible thing I've done. In this 8-part docuseries, I'll show you the bad, the horrible, and downright disgusting aspects of what it's like to be a polyamorous, meth-addicted Tiger King. I'm the real Pokemon Master, you hear?
And just like that, by watching other garbage humans on his television, James felt ever so slightly at peace while the world crumbled around him. For the first time in months, James smiled.
I'll be real with you, being in quarantine has sucked a lot. I miss hanging out with friends, I miss going to non-essential businesses, and I miss wiping my butt with toilet paper instead of my dog. All I've had for company has been Floof and my own mind. So it's been a little hard to stay motivated during this time. But if staying home instead of going to Disneyland will save people's lives, then I guess I'll have to make that sacrifice. It's so hard to be a good person. Some of the things that have been helping me mentally has been exercise, a positive mindset, and garbage television. I used to think that garbage television was stupid and a waste of my mortal existence. But as I started watching more garbage, I realized that I've already been fascinated and enjoyed watching garbage content for years. Have you seen the videos I make? I've said this in my conspiracy video, that I love watching crazy people talk for hours. Now take those same people, give them a camera crew and a budget, and you got a brand new show on TLC. What's that? You've never heard of TLC, the learning channel? Well, TLC is full of wonderful programs and documentaries that'll teach you if you become trashy enough, you'll end up on TV. And that's what schools should be teaching. No, this video isn't sponsored by TLC, but if they wanted to sponsor me, I'd say no. I just want to be on an episode of My Strange Addiction. I'll tell you what the addiction is later, TLC. One show I've been unhealthily binging is called 90 Day Fiancé. It's about when a boy meets a girl, or a girl meets a girl, or a man meets a much younger girl online, and they sort of like each other, but they're from different countries, so when they meet each other, they have 90 days to decide if they want to get married before their visa expires. It's great that the internet exists so that these clearly desperate people in different countries even have the chance to form a relationship. And it's equally great that the internet exists so we can watch very personal moments of these strangers' lives. The show really shines with the most garbage of couples. I've seen other YouTubers talk about this one specific couple, Big Ed and Rose. I don't want to make fun of Big Ed's appearance, but let's just say he saves a lot of money on scarves. And turtle necks. He's a 54-year-old pursuing a relationship and wanting to marry a 23-year-old Filipino woman named Rose. And Ed has a daughter that's 6 years older than Rose. And he's older than Rose's father. Can you imagine for a second if your mom was 6 years younger than you? And on top of that, Ed is a huge liar. He lied about his height, he lied about wanting to have kids with her, he's also really mean to Rose. I mean, sure, he's old enough to be her father, so he's probably used to talking down to young people, and a dad telling their kids that their legs are hairy and their breath stinks is justifiable. But this is his girlfriend! At least make her a bag lunch first. Even if I thought Big Ed was the best guy in the world, do I think a relationship could work between people with a 31-year age gap?
Well, let's take a look at the math. Here is the half your age plus 7 rule graphed out. So if you're 30, then it's socially acceptable to be dating someone who's 22. Now, obviously this graph isn't set in stone, but for reference, here's Big Ed's age versus Rose's age. So when Ed was 40 and taking care of his 15-year-old daughter, Rose was 9.
So do I think an age gap of 31 can work? Well, mathematically and common sense speaking, not until Ed is 76 and Rose is 45. I think that'll take longer than 90 days, though. The second and third reason I love this show is David and Lana. I haven't seen any YouTubers talk about this couple, but they need to. Meet David, a 60-year-old guy from Vegas who's fallen head over wallet for a Ukrainian woman named Lana. He spent 7 years and a quarter of a million US dollars on a relationship where he hasn't even met the other person. He's tried to meet up with Lana on 3 separate occasions already, but got stood up every single time. Now, he's putting all of his credit cards on the table and is willing to risk it all on a fourth trip to the Ukraine to meet his soon-to-be mail-order...
Наречена.
who doesn't speak English. Long story short, they meet after 13 episodes, David gives her a brand new iPhone X to text him on, only for him to get eternally ghosted because her nails were too long to text him back. Let me remind you that they were in contact for 7 years. That's how old Rose was when Ed was 38. Me briefly describing these two's relationship just now was so much of an emotional roller coaster that I don't even need to go back to theme parks anymore. It makes me want to puke, and I hope you can see why I love this show so much. I know that reality TV is fake, and who knows if this entire relationship was scripted and manufactured for the show, but I don't care if it's fake. This smile is real. Watching garbage television all day isn't as fun or healthy as it may seem, believe it or not. Even though I spent a good portion of this video hyping up trash TV, you should also be doing something productive. Like watching YouTube videos. To compensate for all the garbage I watch, I've been exercising more. Right when the pandemic began its exponential spike, I bought a home gym machine and I've been working out 3 times a week with my friend DJ. DJ and I met because we're both friends with Alan Becker, who makes these animations versus animator videos, and one day I noticed that DJ's muscles were a lot like one of my Japanese animes. He was a walking, breathing protagonist that my body dysmorphia had been holding me back from becoming. I reached my skinny hands out to DJ and said, "Hey, DJ, can we work out together?"
So this is where I put the iPad to talk to DJ.
Oh, hey, James.
This is where I got the treadmill, the weights, and this is my favorite piece of equipment, this rag up here so I don't bump my head when I do pull-ups. This is where I keep my air conditioner because it gets very hot in this garage. This is what I used to look like a month ago. Anyway,
the reason I started working out more seriously was because people were calling me skinny and other slanderous synonyms like slender and scrawny, and I told my friends that I was hurt by these comments, but they all unanimously agreed that it's true, I am a slim Jim. It's important to have a reason for working out. Mine is self-loathing. DJ is forcing me to push myself. We've only been going for about 3 months, or a whole 90-day fiancé, and I've already gone from struggling to lift up this much weight to struggling to lift up this much weight. Sorry if I'm flexing too much on you, I'm just proud of my progress. The point is, while trash TV is fun, remember to mix in some productive activities during the day. For example, exercise. You don't need equipment. Do 10 push-ups right now, lose. Clean up after yourself. During these hard times, keeping your space organized and tidy will be a big boost on your mental health. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Learn how to cook. You should also be eating healthy too. Stop eating so many bagel bites. Watch parkour fails. Remind yourself how safe you are inside. These guys could get COVID and a broken tooth. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Shave your head. Who cares anymore? Watch competitive sports fishing and get your blood pressure to rise so much that you feel pressured into working out again. And oh my god, how big is that fish? Oh my god, it's a 1,200 pound bull shark! They need 7 people to pull it on the boat and oh my god, is that Big Ed?
I'll take school facts for 800, Alex. This is the most useless class that a person could take in school. Oh man. What is poetry? I'm sorry, Jeff, but the correct answer is all of them. They're all useless. In my first video, I didn't have enough time to say this, but I hate it when people are cool with their teachers. I understand that some teachers are more laid back than others, and sometimes they'll ask the class, "So, how was everyone's weekend?" Then if you want to talk about something or have important news, then you can share it. My dog died! Haha, yeah, they do that. But there's a line and you shouldn't cross it. Don't talk to your teacher just to talk to them during class. I don't know how much of a problem this is in other places of the world, but sometimes there would be kids in my class that would say, "Hey Susan, how was your daughter's dance recital? Did you remember all of her moves? I saw the video you posted on Facebook. It looked like she was having a fun time." Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Maybe I wouldn't have been a good teacher. Before I tell you about my poetry teacher, I need to tell you about the preparatory school I went to so you can better understand where I'm coming from. So I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade, and first off, what is a preparatory school? Google says it's a private school that prepares students for college. Now hearing that definition, you might think, wait, don't all schools prepare students for college? Isn't that a school's job? And you might think that a preparatory school is more fancy and made out of marble and all the kids come from rich families. No. What it means is that the schools get little government funding and parents have to pay for desks and the teacher's salary. I know different private schools will vary depending on how rich the parents are. I'm sure that school made out of marble exists somewhere, but the preparatory school I went to was relatively worse than a normal public school. The school I went to didn't even have desks. They had fold-up tables and the chairs were fold-up too. How did they— Oh. Well, now I know where all the budget went. The main difference between a public school and a prep school is that a prep school is smaller and there's a uniform and there's lockers. So why did my twin sister and I attend a preparatory school? Because twins have superpowers and we need to go to a special school to enhance our abilities. Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That'd be cool though. We went because when we were starting our freshman year, our older brother was a senior and he was already attending this preparatory school, and my mom didn't want to drive to two high schools to pick us up. We already had a carpool in place. You can't just mess with the carpool. And me and my sister didn't know what to expect from a public high school. We've never been. We thought we'd get bullied or something. Boy, I feel like picking on someone today. Yeah, sure, we can go to a prep school. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Well, the carpool we had made it so we would arrive at the school super early before everyone else, and we'd be picked up from the school super late. And also, because it was a prep school, they gave out a stupid amount of homework. I remember breaking up the homework into pieces, like, okay, I can do the geometry while I'm waiting for school to start, the biology homework I can do during geometry class, and I have choir after lunch so I can just do this during lunch. Look at me being responsible. I have a little sister who just finished her freshman year in a public high school, and she thinks it was so hard. Oh, you thought your ninth grade was hard? Try doing twice the amount of homework and wear the same pants every day. So now the only question remaining is, why did my older brother go to a prep school in the first place? Bro, why did you go to a prep school in the first place? IDK, just decided to. Just felt like I should. My mom reads my scripts, and she told me that he went to a prep school because one of his friends said that there were cute girls at the school, so he decided to stay there for 4 years. Okay, now let's talk about my poetry teacher. I'll call him Mr. Poe, because that's short for poetry. Poetry wasn't even an elective class. Every freshman was required to take it. And surprisingly, poetry was only the second most useless class you took at the school. The sophomores took a class on Latin. You know, that dead language that no one speaks. So Mr. Poe, I don't want to judge him too hard. I don't know how he was like outside of school, but just picking up the vibes I got from him as a 14-year-old, I think he was depressed. I mean, to be fair, anyone who likes poetry probably has something wrong in their head. But Mr. Poe just seemed sad all the time. Every single day he would start the class by saying, "It's the best day ever." Which, if you think about it, saying that every day only means that the days are going to get better and better, which is sort of poetic. But I think Mr. Poe was lying to himself. Also, Mr. Poe really liked anacondas. I mean, snakes. He really liked snakes. Sometimes he would go off on tangents talking about snakes. Royal pythons, also called American ball python, got their name because they turned into a ball when they get nervous. Also, did you know that snakes have two... Never mind. Sometimes in class, we'd be analyzing poetry, and Mr. Poe told us that every single word in a poem was important. The poet didn't have to use the word the, but they did. What did they mean? Sometimes we would spend days analyzing a single poem, taking notes and talking about what we thought the poet meant. One time a poem we were reading had someone talking, so there were quotation marks at the start of the sentence, but there weren't quotation marks at the end. The poet forgot to put end quotes. I remember noticing it and thinking, aha! A clue! Mr. Poe, I just made a breaking discovery. There's no end quotes here, meaning that the whole rest of this poem is told by this character. And Mr. Poe said, oh no, that's just a typo. Well, frickin', why am I perfectly nitpicking this piece when the poet purposely put poor punctuation in his poems? Pterodactyl! This is gonna sound off topic, but do you guys know what lateral thinking puzzles are? Lateral thinking puzzles are sort of like riddles, but more stupid. You're given a strange situation with little information, and you have to ask the person who told you the puzzle yes or no questions to get the answer. My favorite lateral thinking puzzle is this because it's so stupid. A man goes into a restaurant, orders albatross, eats one bite, and then jumps off a bridge. Why? Now, normally, if we were playing legitly, you would ask me yes or no questions like, was the man in a relationship? And I would answer them saying, well, not anymore. The explanation is this. I'm not going to read it out because it's super long and complicated, but you can read it if you want. Well, Mr. Poe also liked to tell these lateral thinking puzzles, but his solutions were more dumber. One of the puzzles he told the class was, you're trapped in a restaurant. How do you get out? Now, I can think of like 5 solutions right off the top of my head. Okay, through the door, through a window, use a crowbar if it's locked. There's probably a sharp knife to cut through a wall, or you can dig a hole under everything with a spoon. But it was actually none of those answers. So, how do you get out of a restaurant you're trapped in? You get an education. Okay, let me explain. You're trapped in a restaurant because you're a waiter. That's your job. And to get out of the restaurant, you need to get a good education so you can get a better job. Kind of like how I was able to quit my job in the food industry by getting an education.
It's funny because he dropped out of college.
So the class got the answer to that riddle, but Mr. Poe told us another riddle and we never figured that one out. And that riddle is, anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to... blank. Given that the answer to the first riddle was education, the answer to this could be anything. I really wanted to know the answer to this riddle, so I googled it hoping that Mr. Poe just stole it from the internet, and I found this song, anyone can dig a hole close enough to a ditch, but it takes a real man to call it home. Which sounds poetic enough. Let's see if the song gives us any more clues. Mr. Poe, I didn't know you were into this sort of stuff. So I wish I could give you the answer, but I don't have one. Feel free to guess what you think the answer is and give your reasoning in the comments. That'll be fun to read. But I will say the answer that I did come up with that I think makes the most sense. Anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to hide the body.
Mommy, why do humans hate us?
I don't know, Matthew. Our species is completely harmless to them, and we keep the mosquito population down, who are responsible for killing more humans every year than other humans do.
So, humans have no rational reason to fear us, but they still do?
I'm afraid humans aren't that smart, Matthew. Sleep tight. Don't let the bed humans bite.
Love you, Mommy.
I love you too, Matthew.
Mom?
I think the hate that spiders get is a tad bit undeserved. Okay, fine, if you're in the shower and you see a spider crawling up your leg like a freaking pervert, then that's an appropriate time to freak out. But other than that, spiders are most likely not going to hurt you. Their webs are too weak to trap you, they don't know how to open doors, and there's only like a 50% chance that they're venomous. Okay, but for real, unless you live in Australia, the chances of you dying by a spider bite is pretty low. There are venomous spiders, yes, and if you're having a negative reaction to a spider bite, then you should get treatment, but a large percentage of spiders are harmless. Even the Black Widow, known as the most venomous spider in North America, won't kill you if you're a healthy adult. Their bite will be painful for a couple of days, sure, but like, you'll walk it off.
That was a joke. If you get bitten by a Black Widow spider, then don't walk it off. Go see a doctor.
And hey, if you're lucky enough, you'll get superpowers. So, wait, the two most dangerous spiders in North America are the brown recluse and the Black Widow? What are you trying to say about dangerous colors, America? Oh wait, the great white shark's even more dangerous. Never mind. Technically, sharks are like the second least dangerous animal out there besides puppies, because like they don't want to eat humans. I mean, like if you had to fight a spider and a shark, this shark would win. Also, spiders kill pests. According to this comic I made in 2014 and this National Geographic article, a single spider can eat about 2,000 insects a year. So if you're not a fan of flies, moths, or mosquitoes, which incidentally kill 600,000 people a year, then you're on Team Spider, because they're also not fans of them. Well, they are fans of them, but they are fans because they eat them. I'm not saying you have to be roommates with arachnids. I'm just saying that if you see a spider, don't put it through torture continuously smashing it with a blunt object. It's still moving!
Kill me.
Instead, get a cup and carefully place it over a spider. They're really dumb, so doing this will be super easy. Then scoop up your new best friend with a piece of paper and yeet it back into the wild with the rest of God's glorious creatures. Yeah, actually, there's a high chance that they won't make it being thrown into a completely different environment, but they should have thought of that before they decided to live in my house. Even though a spider has 8 eyes, they have terrible eyesight, so that spider that landed on your face did not do it intentionally. Some spiders that live in caves are completely blind. They don't even have 1 eye. But even if they did have eyes, their whole world would still be pitch black. What a sad life to be a part of. Just every time you're outside seeing the sun, just think that somewhere there's a colony of spiders just in pure blackness. Just never seeing the sun, never seeing their children smile or graduate college. They're just sitting in a cave for all their life. So is nature, and so that is the way the cookie crumbles. Also, we're forgetting the most amazing thing about spiders, which is that they're incredibly talented in web design. Proportionately, the silk that makes up a spider web is stronger than the fibers that make up a bulletproof vest. So next time you go to a gunfight,
put on a spiderweb instead. The amazing thing about spiderwebs is that not only can they save Wilbur from being slaughtered, but it's just stupid incredible that something so small can make such an intricate shape from nothing but the material inside their own bodies. The Golden Silk Orb Weaver spider has too many middle names and has enough silk inside of them to make 3 full spiderwebs. And it's this guy's job to pin that spider down and pull out all of its silk like some kind of spider predator. It's okay, though. The documentary said he was just harmlessly immobilizing the spiders. I can't believe this is someone's job. I don't think telling people I'm a YouTuber is that bad anymore. So, what do you do for a living? I harmlessly immobilize spiders with thumbtacks and pull silk out of their abdomen to add to my ever-increasing collection. What about you? Oh, I, make YouTube videos? I see people with arachnophobia being irrationally afraid of these harmless little guys, and I just don't see the sense of fearing something that ultimately does good things for the ecosystem. But you know what we should be afraid of? Bees! Bees are terrifying! Look, they're sucking the blood out of this guy to make honey! Oh, they're dying at an alarming rate? Good! Okay, that was a joke. Bees are, without a doubt, the most important insect on this planet. Not only do they have the best work ethic of any living thing on Earth, which is why none of them are YouTubers, they also pollinate 30% of the world's crops. Don't ask me who pollinates the rest, because I don't know. Without bees, humanity would turn to pure anarchy. Bees are so important that world-famous comedian Jerry Seinfeld made a documentary about the life of a bee and what the world would be like without them. But ever since 2006, bees, just like all the memes say, have been dying at an alarming rate. The scary thing is that scientists don't know exactly the reason for this bee-pocalypse. But they think it has to do with new pesticides being used on farms, parasites that kill the bee, and global warming. So once we figure out how to fix those 3 problems, we'll be in good shape. It's just a little bee pun. We like to have fun around here. Now, what can you, a concerned citizen, do to stop the dropping population of bees? Most likely nothing, because I don't think anyone watching this makes laws about pesticides or stopping global warming. So we just gotta sit back and hope the people who make those laws know the importance of bees. But maybe you should plant a couple flowers just to be on the safe side. The reason I have a fear of bees is that I've gotten stung by a bee not 3 times, not 4 times, but 2 times! Two times! Now, obviously, as I've grown, I see the importance of bees, and I know not to throw rocks at them. The first time I got stung, I was outside, and I guess I was playing too close to a beehive, because I got stung on my arm, and I cried a lot. The second time, I was in my backyard, barefoot, and I was walking around, and you know how sometimes when you're about to do something, and your brain realizes that you're about to make a mistake, but your body is already committed to the motion, and you don't have enough time to stop yourself? So I was in the middle of taking a step, and I saw that I was about to step on a bee, but my body didn't have the reaction time or the motor skills to avoid the step, and... I'm sure the bee was just acting in self-defense, but... Man, that scarred me. Some people may have an allergic reaction to bee stings, and they should go to a hospital if they get stung, but in my case, it just hurt a lot, and my mom put baking soda over where I got stung, and I cried. When people found out I was afraid of bees, they would always tell me that bees are docile creatures, and they only sting you if they feel threatened. They would say the same thing about spiders too, by the way. So whenever I would see a bee, I would silently freak out and stay as still as a rock, because unlike spiders, with bees, you're not allowed to fight back. You'll both lose if that happens. I gotta show this bee how unthreatening I am. They should be able to just take a look at me and know that. But then, when a bee lands on your arm... Holy frick. That's true fear. You just have to quietly watch the bee, hoping it didn't just have a bad day and decide to end its life on you. That never happened, though. Ever since I took a more calm approach to bees, I've never been stung. And I've never been bitten by a spider, either. Wasps, though, they're just mean. They can pack up and leave for all I care. I don't give a crap about wasps. So, what did we learn?
Hey, just a heads up, don't get too attached to any of the hamsters mentioned in this video, because they're all dead. And I would say that no hamsters were harmed in the making of this video. Well, I mean, no hamsters were harmed while I made this video, they're all still dead, but some hamsters, they got harmed. Just keep watching. If there's anything I've learned that the internet just loves is stupid drama and cute animals. So I'm going to talk about all the cute hamsters that I've... enslaved. Our family enslaved quite a lot. It was my twin sister who really wanted a pet hamster and bugged my mom to get one. And my mom, being super nice, bought her the cage, and we bought everything else, including a little black hamster. We named him Squeaks. And he liked to do this really cute thing where he put all of his food in his hamster wheel and was made of plastic so he could do that. And then late at night he would just run in it and it would sound like... It was like a more annoying maraca. I actually made a comic on paper inspired by this hamster. Wow, you got a hamster? Yeah, but he doesn't do much. Well, yeah, this type of hamster is nocturnal. Really? That means I'll hardly notice him. And then at night, he's trying to sleep, but the hamster is loud, and that's keeping him awake. And the joke is that he said he'd hardly notice him, and he's noticing him. It's not that funny. And I need to tell you about a dog that we have named Georgie. And actually, a little fun fact about Georgie. She was born on Election Day of 2004, which is a much cooler holiday to have a birthday on. It only comes once every 4 years. It's like leap year. It's more rare. So since George W. Bush won the 2004 election, we named our dog Georgie after him. Aww. And that also means that our 12th birthday was on the 2nd. I definitely won't be able to get this video out by that time, but still.
Happy birthday to you. Yay! So Georgie can get the birthday, because it's her birthday, and Poppy can get the girl, because she's a girl. Do you like it?
I wonder if this tastes good.
Oh.
Did you eat it?
This is a huge waste of money.
Anyway, back to rodents. This dog just loved to murder these animals. Well, I don't know if murder's the right word. No, murder's the right word. You have to understand that Georgie is a West Highland Terrier, and that breed is known for hunting small animals. So having Georgie and a hamster in the same house doesn't mix well. We had this little plastic hamster ball that we put Squeaks in sometimes. The first time we put Squeaks into his plastic ball, my older brother bowled him. Like a bowling ball. PETA, don't sue me. I was vegan for a week. And Georgie thought it was a treat just for her. A treat with a hard outer shell and a juicy middle. She would go straight up rabid wolf on that hamster ball. We didn't put Squeaks inside his hamster ball anymore after that. But there's even more to say about this hamster. One day, me and my sister came home from school and Squeaks was just gone. He escaped. Everyone, check your pockets! We looked everywhere and we couldn't find him. We had to keep a close eye on Georgie at all times. My sister put up missing posters around the house. I don't know if those helped. We made these traps out of Duplo. Did anyone else's parents get them Duplo instead of Legos? No, only my parents were that lame. Alright. We built this box thing out of Duplo, and we made these stairs going up to the top of the box, and we put lettuce on each step, and the plan was that the hamster would walk up the stairs and fall in the box, cause they're stupid. But the traps never worked. And all the hamsters we got in the future that also escaped, we made the same traps, and not once did they ever work. 4 days. Squeaks was missing for 4 days. We found his body inside the wall. He was alive! My dad was sitting on the couch relaxing. It was dead quiet, and he just heard the faintest... Squeaks was inside the wall! We think he got in through our laundry chute. I don't know what I would do if my kid's hamster was inside the wall of my house. Well, kids, now's an important time I teach you about death. My dad ended up cutting 3 holes in the wall and lured Squeaks out with some lettuce. Poor thing, he was probably starving. Hopefully he kept some extra food in his cheeks. So even being tormented by the dog and getting stuck in the wall for 4 days, Squeaks still lived a fulfilling 2 years of life. Hamsters don't have that long a lifespan. We buried him in the backyard. After the Squeaks dynasty, we got some more hamsters. Squeaks 2, that was the next one. We thought maybe if we introduced Squeaks 2 to Georgie, then they could be friends and get along. I'll spare you the details of what happened that night. The next one we named Killer because he kept biting us, so get it? Killer? Yeah, he ended up getting killed. Nah, I'm just kidding. He wasn't killed. He lived a long and normal hamster life. Squeaks 2 was killed, though. I don't know if you picked up on that. We bought these 3 little hamsters. Seriously, they're the most adorable little things. They look like this. I forgot their names. We'll just call them the 3 amigos. Aw. The lady at the pet store told us that if we bought hamsters from the same litter, they would all get along. She was obviously just trying to sell us more hamsters. Or maybe she didn't have any siblings. But these bros just hated each other. They would never stop fighting. As I was writing the script for this, I thought, well, maybe they were just aggressively playing. So I googled, do hamsters play with each other, just to be sure, and the first thing that showed up, dwarf hamsters, which is what the 3 amigos were, are quite territorial and will not see former cage mates as old friends. They see them as threatening rivals. So there we go, you really know your hamsters, lady. So we had to get 3 different cages for them. We put them right next to each other, and I swear they still gave each other some death glares. I actually made a video a long time ago about this time I broke one of their cages. I was cleaning it outside, and for whatever reason, I was like, huh, I wonder if I could stand on it. The answer, no, I couldn't. The glass broke and I bled everywhere, and I still have the scar on my foot. And then all the 3 amigos died off, one by one.
Sorry, I'm getting really emotional. We also had this other hamster named Buddy, and I wasn't going to mention him because he just escaped and we never found him. Except as my mom was reading over the script, because she reads over my scripts, thanks mom, she turned to me and said, "Did we ever tell you what happened to Buddy?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "You know how we couldn't find him? Well, we did, but the dog got to him first. This one time I wanted to buy a hamster and I saw some that were on sale, and there was this piece of paper next to the cage that said, 'Please adopt us.' Oh shoot, I'll take one of these puppies." No, not an actual puppy. I meant one of the hamsters. And I named her Pumpkin Seed because she was that tan pumpkin seed color. But then 1 month after I got her, she just died for no reason, even though I loved her. She had food, she had water. This wasn't the first time I was taking care of a hamster, okay? All the other ones lived for a couple of years. I was so sad. I totally got chipped. No wonder they were on sale. They were all halfway to death's door. I mean, I only had the hamster for a month. I didn't get that emotionally attached to it. But then later, I got a different hamster that I paid full price for, and I named her Gumball. Unlike all the other hamsters that were technically my sister's, this hamster was all mine. And she didn't have anything traumatic happen to her. She had a good hamster life. I was pretty sad when Gumball died. We lavished these hamsters, okay? We loved them. At least my sister did. She cried when they died and made little gravestones for them. Our mom used to always say, "There's no point in being a skinny hamster." She gave them a lot of treats, so much so that it got to the point that the hamster would come out looking for my mom just by the sound of her voice. All in all, there's about 7 dead hamsters buried in our backyard. Rip in peace, little bros.
So like I said, I don't know what this one's about. I don't know what the joke is. I just don't get it. So I will make you an offer. I will give $20 to anyone that explains what this comic is trying to do.
So immediately after posting the Garfield video, I had a bunch of people try and figure out what the second Garfield comic was. And you guys got it almost immediately, like within minutes. I saw a bunch of other comments out there that had the right explanation, but it was the user Solo McCraft's comment that I saw first, and it was the most upvoted. Some people probably spent a good 10 minutes typing out all these explanations. I'm sorry, but this guy was first. So after trying to figure out how to message him on YouTube, I asked if he had a Twitter. He said he did, and we talked there. "You got a PayPal?" "No, I'm only 15. Crap. So we decided that I would pay him via a Steam gift card. I just wanted to mention that and say that I was true to my promise of $23. Except Steam only has $20 gift cards, so I guess $3 is still on the table. So now, what you've all been waiting for, let me explain what this comic was trying to do. So that is a teeth brush, and that is teeth paste, and that is John walking up to it, and okay, you know how adults and dentists tell kids that the amount of toothpaste you should put on a toothbrush should be the size of a pea? Well, that's what John was trying to say. They say you should use the amount of toothpaste that is similar to the size of a pea. See, this word pea is supposed to be the pea as in the vegetable pea. I think that's what threw me off the most, is because I kept thinking that this was a potty joke. Then John is going to brush his teeth, and he says, "Garfield, that's not pea-sized." And he says this because Garfield is holding a teeth brush with a mountain of teeth paste. I thought this was like a spray or something. And then Garfield says, "Yes, it is, because the teeth paste is pea-sized because he has a massive pea. That's why it's green. This is a pea as in the vegetable." I don't know why it's not round, though. But I get the comic now! That was stupid. I just want to talk about this comment on the video I saw. "That's not Garfield. That's your own original character. Garfield!" And I really like that. And he's drawn like this. Ah, I love it. See, that's Garfield, and this is Garfield. And okay, there were a couple of people who redrew the comic and sent it to me. And it's funny because some of them, I don't think they knew what was happening either. So I'm just going to read some of the comics that people sent to me. So these three comics right here, they were actually correct. They got it right. I like how this one says, "Not as excited." There's a toothbrush, and then John's walking up to the toothbrush. And they basically all say the same thing. They say you should use a pea-sized amount of toothpaste. And then he's gonna go brush his teeth, and I like how this one has a massive toothbrush. And then they all go, "Garfield, that's not pea-sized." And then you see Garfield with the mountain of toothpaste, and he's like, "Yes, it is," because he has another pea. I like this one because it's like actually round. And all the rest didn't get it right. And this one, I really like the facial expressions. There's like, he's walking up and he says, "They say you should use the really big toothpaste." He's about to go, and he's, "Garfield, that's not paste." And then he's, "Yes, it is." Oh, I love it. This one, it feels like a computer should be reading this one.
"Here is the bathroom, where the comic will take place. John walks in looking awake as ever. They said to always brush your teeth with toothpaste. He talks about what his dentist said. He gets his IDK. Garfield, that's not a piece. Garfield interrupts him by doing this. He basically pulls up the water pipe and water goes everywhere. John is upset. Then Garfield pulls up the sewage drain as well, so there is gross liquid everywhere. John is scared now. Garfield explains it all in one sentence. Yes, it is.
Good job, man. This one, I love the creative take on it. First, it's called garnish, and then John comes in. They say you should use the big toothbrush to remove all your last night mistakes. And then he has another giant toothbrush. Garfunkel, that's not a toothbrush. I know, John, it's a crack pipe. Well, life has no real meaning anyway. Ah, that was great. I like how he took what this was supposed to be, a toothbrush, and made it look like a crack pipe. And to be honest, it looks more like a crack pipe than a toothbrush. So good job. And this one was made like 20 minutes after I posted the video. It was drawn super fast. And I like how they drew Garfield, how I drew Garfield. So he goes, Garfield, that's not pieces. Translation, that's not your toothbrush. He takes it. And then translation, to fight John for toothbrush ownership, Garfield unleashes his secret power. Yes, it is. The secret power is being able to control a green slime. So this next one was drawn by a comic friend of mine. He makes a comic called Doggy Bag. He's on Tumblr and iFunny. I actually collabed and made a comic with him before. So this one is actually a remake of the Fire comic. And I just love all the attention to detail in this one. It starts by saying, by James R., age 6, illustrated by Doggy Bag. And has her Twitter. And he calls it Garfield. And so we see John saying happy birthday, and then wah, and then firefighters go, where's the fire? And then John goes, my cat just having a bee day. I like how the cake is falling apart. The beep beep, and the first beep looks funny, like how it was in the first one. And John goes, oh no. For some reason, I just love how lifeless Garfield looks in this comic. So anyway, those were all the comics. Sorry if I missed any. Thanks for watching. We're not going to do an end card, and I'll see you next time. Mwah. No, I'm not going to do the mwah this time.
Jeff, you have the board.
I'll take random James trivia for 400, Alex.
This was James's first career choice before his YouTube channel kicked off.
Oh, I know this one. What is a male prostitute?
Okay, that bit's done now. Male prostitute was never a career goal.
Well, I mean, it's not completely off the table. You never know how YouTube will turn out.
If you didn't know this Odd Ones Out trivia, I wanted to be a math teacher when I grew up. My dream job was actually a cartoonist. But since me and my parents didn't think I'd be able to make any money drawing pictures, I chose a math teacher as my, I'll settle for this job. I mean, I like math, so I wouldn't have hated being a math teacher. And I'm also probably good at teaching children. I haven't checked, though, but how hard can it be? Listen, kids, I have 2.7 million subs on YouTube, so if you want a shout-out, you'll have to do the homework. And I thought that a teaching job would give me enough free time to doodle cartoons, so being a math teacher would have been perfect. But oh boy, that did not turn out how I expected. If for some reason my channel died and I stopped making YouTube videos, I would probably go back to school and finish my math education major. And then I'd be teaching a class, and then one of my students would find out that I used to do YouTube, and then they'd say, Mr. James, are you the Odd Ones Out?
The Odd Ones Out? I haven't heard that name in years.
You shouldn't smoke in front of children, Mr. James. I just want to point this out. In my peeing video, I drew my first grade teacher like this, and in my Harry the Moth video, I drew my kindergarten teacher like this.
Do you have an explanation on why they're drawn so similar?
Yeah, I was lazy.
Teachers play such an important role for children, and if I'm being honest, I don't think they get paid enough to take their job seriously. A good teacher can make you excited to learn the material and actually teach you, while a bad teacher can not only waste your time and not teach you anything, but also crush your dreams. I took choir in 9th grade. Everyone had to take it, okay? It was a prep school. I'm not weird. And one time while we were singing a song, the teacher said, "Stop! Who's flat?" Then she pointed at a boy and told him, "You, sing." And he sang for a bit. Then she pointed at another boy, "You, sing." Then she went through a couple more, and then she pointed to me and said, "You, sing." And I sung. Stop! James, during the next song, don't sing. Either she had really good hearing, or I was just that terrible at singing. Now, I really hated choir, so if given the choice to sing or not sing, I would choose not every time. But what if I actually wanted to be a singer, and when I sang just then, I was trying my hardest? That would have been soul-crushing! I would have given up on music right then and there. Thankfully, my art teacher was a lot more laid back. She definitely had favorite students, and I wasn't one of them, but she never told anyone not to draw. One time, I showed my art teacher my newest comic, which at the time was this one. And without telling her that I was the one who made it, I asked, "What do you think of this art style?" And she said, "Oh, I hate it, but it's fine if you like it."
In my classroom, we try to go for realism, but people with that art style can still have successful careers.
She said she hated it.
Teachers just need to be more supportive with students and teach them in creative ways. That's why I think so many people hate math. You just haven't had a teacher that made you want to learn.
You'd pay attention and study for the tests if I was your math teacher, wouldn't you?
Don't get me wrong, teaching isn't an easy job. And even the best teacher can't make everyone in their class excited to learn. I mean, I probably could, but there's definitely a difference between a good and bad teacher. I had this French teacher in 9th grade, and she made me really hate French, and by association, the entire country of France. She spoke English on the first day of class, and then only spoke French for the rest of the year. We were in French 1, by the way. I didn't understand anything that was going on. I would just tune her out. I'd be doodling on a piece of paper, and then people would get out their textbooks and start flipping through it, and then I'd think, oh, we're doing this now? I didn't learn anything in that class. Honestly, I barely know any French. This is all the French words that I know. I can count to 10. Ou, du, trois, carte, cinq, six, sept, huit, neuf. Okay, I can only count to 9. And I know that Eiffel Tower is Tour Eiffel, quack is coin, and door is portal. My twin sister, who was in the same class and had the same living conditions as me, turned out a lot different. She learned a lot of French and continued to take classes after 9th grade. So maybe this whole knowledge thing has a lot to do with the student and not the teacher. Nah, it's the teacher's fault. Did anyone else, when you were little, think that your teacher lived at the school? Because I remember one time my kindergarten teacher came to school in her pajamas and told us that she lived at the school. And that made perfect sense. Yeah, this is your home. This is the only place they ever see you. Therefore, you live here.
Man, I wish I could work in my pajamas.
When I went to community college, I had a math teacher who was this old grandpa, and on the first day, he told us that he never missed a class in 20 years. But then, the very next day, he didn't show up. Now, in college, teachers not showing up to class is pretty normal. Or at least it was in the colleges I went to. It happened more times than it did in high school, that's for sure. That's something to look forward to, seniors. Every time it does happen, there's always that one kid who will say, you know, there's a rule that if the teacher doesn't show up within the first 15 minutes of class, then you can leave. I don't know if that rule is true, but I'm not going to look it up. Because I like that rule, and I want it to be true. And I don't even go to college anymore, so why does it matter? So teachers not showing up, that's not too abnormal, but since this old guy told us he never missed a day of class in 20 years, we thought he died. But nope, he just missed a day. He showed up the third day, I don't know what his excuse was, because after I saw him, I thought, oh good, he's alive. And then I stopped paying attention, because community college sucks. I'd say that my favorite teacher would be my 11th grade AP US history teacher. I liked him because it was obvious that he liked the material, and he would teach us in a way that was fun and interesting. He was also a more laid back and generally a funny person. He's the teacher that I want to be. He gave me a compliment once that has always stuck with me. He was telling the class about the AP test, which is the super important open-ended essay test that we took at the end of the year, and if we did well on it, the grade would count for college credit. So like a week before the test, our teacher was preparing us, and he said, guys, don't try and be funny on the AP test. The graders don't have a sense of humor. Except James. James can be funny on the test. Aww, that compliment made me so happy and confident. I don't know how serious my teacher was when he said that, and he probably doesn't even remember saying it, but I really appreciated it. I ended up getting a 3 on the test, which is only partial credit in select colleges, so maybe I'm not funny. That was 11th grade. In 12th, I took all AP classes, but I didn't take any of the AP tests. I was too apathetic. But I turned out fine. Actually, no. My favorite teacher is my 9th grade English teacher, who emailed me and said he watches my videos. Hi, Mr. Batman. Sorry I plagiarized the Berlin Wall essay. I really wanted to talk about my 9th grade poetry teacher. Yes, I took choir, French, and poetry all in 9th grade. It was a preparatory school. That teacher was definitely something, but this video is getting too long, so I'll have to make a part 2.
James, you said you were going to make a teacher's part 2! I didn't subscribe to fake news!
I know. But don't worry, I'll do that next video. But right now we're doing this. So my friend Your Movie Sucks, great channel, over 500,000 subs, asked me and a bunch of other YouTubers if we could talk about a movie that scared us as a kid. Now, growing up, I wasn't allowed to watch scary movies. I remember one time my parents were watching a movie downstairs, and I went down to see what all the noises were about, and my mom said, "Oh no, honey, you can't watch this, it's too scary." And then years later, I learned that the movie they were watching was Jurassic Park. I think I could have handled it, Mom. I don't know if you could tell by the length of this video, but it's going to be pretty different than the videos that I usually post. But I think it's good to try out new things, and hopefully we'll all have a fun time listening to me talk about this movie. Because, folks, I'm excited to share with you the movie that traumatized me most as a kid. And that movie is, drumroll please, is, you already read the title, The Dark Crystal.
Okay, so The Dark Crystal came out in 1982, 14 years before I was even born. This movie was made for a whole different generation of people, but somehow I still saw it. I don't remember how I saw it, my family didn't own it on VHS, and I forget how old I was exactly, but let's say for the sake of this video, I saw this movie when I was 17. Because that's legally still a child. This movie was directed by Frank Oz and freaking Jim Henson. Jim Henson is the creator of, I don't know if you've heard of this, but The Muppets? You might have seen them before. There's no denying that Jim Henson was a very talented man when it came to puppets, and the work he did on The Dark Crystal is amazing. As much as I'm about to talk this movie down, it's honestly a work of art. The most enjoyment I got rewatching it was just the artistic appreciation of the character design, the scenery, the costumes, and most importantly, the puppetry. Some of the puppetry was amazing. Like this shot. How'd they do that without CGI? And did I mention that there's no people in this film? Except for full body shots, then they just used a real person dressed up and had them not face the camera. But as I rewatched The Dark Crystal, I realized that the movie was kinda garbage. So instead of talking about the parts of the movie that scared me as a child, I'm gonna be talking about why this movie was pretty bad. So now this video just turned into one of those bad movie review videos, but honestly, I like watching other people talk about bad movies, like The Room and Birdemic and... Oh, what was that other one? I can't quite put my paw on it. For this video, I ended up doing some research, something I don't normally do for videos, and oh man, is this rabbit hole deep. Jim Henson had a bunch of ideas for the world of The Dark Crystal, but wasn't able to fit all of his ideas into 90 minutes of film. And because he didn't explain the rules of the world well enough, the movie suffered. It felt unfinished and unstarted. Basically, the movie didn't leave you wanting more, it just left you thinking... Wait, what? Some of you might be thinking, well, James, it's just a kid's movie. Kids are dumb. Why are you analyzing a kid? Shut up. Brian Froud, one of the head artists of the movie, even said that when we finished the film, we knew that we had only seen a fragment of this other world. Bad fragment, I guess. So even the creators of this movie felt that they left out a lot of stuff. So in 2012, a three-part comic book was published to be as a prequel to the movie, and I bought and read all three of them. And I will say that they did do a better job explaining the world that Jim Henson had in mind, but you shouldn't have to read a book before you see a movie.
Especially since the books weren't available until after the movie came out.
In the movie, stuff happens for no reason. Like in one scene, the main character... This is Jen, the main character, by the way. Get used to looking at this guy's face. I've done so much digging and research into this world that I'm completely desensitized by how weird this puppet looks. If you think this puppet looks creepy, you should have seen some of his earlier designs. Just be thankful this is what you ended up with. So in this scene, Jen is trying to pick out which of the crystal shards is the right one that he needs for his quest. And what does he do to find the right one? That's right, he plays his flute, and then the right shard he needed just glows. Wouldn't you do that too if you were in the same situation? This movie doesn't explain why the crystal likes his music, it doesn't come up later, it just happens. That's basically this whole movie. Things happening slowly. So here we go, children. Hold my hand as I take you on a magical journey, but not too magical that it doesn't make sense. That is The Dark Crystal. The plot. It starts with a narrator telling us that there's this world and that it's dying. By the way, this world is named Thra. They don't mention it once in the movie, but in the prequels and in the Wikipedia article, they all called it Thra. Okay. Thra is dying because this one crystal, this one, cracked. How? I don't know. I mean, I do know because I read the prequels, but this movie doesn't tell us. Are you still with me? Good, we're not even a minute in. Because this crystal cracked, two new species were born. The cruel Skeksis, the bad guys, and the gentle mystics, the good guys. And both species are dying. Now, I'm no biologist, but I think they're probably dying because there's no woman. That would wipe out a species pretty quickly, I'd think. Instead of having women, the Skeksis use the crystal to make them young again. Maybe. It's either the crystal or the sun.
So too they learn to draw new life from the sun.
Okay, so then what do you need the crystal for? Now we see the good creatures, the mystics, and with the mystics lives another creature called a Gelfling. It's like an elfling, but with a G. You may remember him from earlier. He's naked now, but meet your protagonist, Jen. This movie makes up so many words, just try and keep up.
And a journey must begin. The journey of Jen.
Okay, that's a little pretentious movie. All right, let's tone it down a little. Then we see that the Emperor Skeksis is dying, oh no. And then we get the second scariest scene in the whole movie. Yeah, we're not even 15 minutes in and we're at the part that gave me nightmares. Then the mystic that's basically Jen's dad is also dying, and he tells Jen that he needs to find the cracked piece of the crystal, the shard, and then he just needs to plop that sucker back in the crystal where it belongs. And then boom, boom, the world is saved. Again, they don't explain why doing this would save the world. Like, they could have at least tried to make something up, like once the crystal is fixed, woman will appear. Jen's dad tells him to
follow the greater sun for a day to the home of Ogra.
Now, I'm no astronomer, but I think following the sun for a day would just make you go in a circle. What am I supposed to do when it's noon? Now the Skeksis, they're like, oh, well, dang it, guys. Who's going to be our new emperor? This Skeksis named Chamberlain.
It's time to make my move.
Who is my second favorite character in this whole movie, thinks that he should be emperor. I mean, who wouldn't want to be emperor of, like, eight other bird monsters? The way that you can remember that this Skeksis is Chamberlain is that every time he's on camera, he says this. Hey man, you can't be emperor, says the Skeksis. Oh yeah? Fight me for it, replied Chamberlain. Since these two are puppets and don't have lower bodies, they can't actually fight each other, which is super disappointing. So instead, the two have a competition to see who can hit a rock the hardest, because that's how you tell who's fit to lead. You can't have someone be your emperor when they can't even hit a rock that hard. Anyway, Chamberlain loses, and all the other Skeksis banish him and rip up his clothes. Okay, now hold on. Do you see what's funny about this screenshot? This Skeksis is wearing glasses, meaning in this universe, optometrists exist, and this Skeksis had to go through an eye exam to get his prescription. Do you like number one or number two? Does anyone else think that's funny? No? Alright. Anyway, after the Skeksis banish Chamberlain, they see in the crystal that there's this Gelfling just walking around. Man, I didn't know the crystal could snitch like that. So they send out these crab monsters to get him. And by the way, those crab monsters are called Garthams, and they are created by this handsome Skeksis. You'd know that if you read the Wikipedia article. Anyway, back to Jen. What's he up to?
I'm not ready to go alone. Alright. Alone, then.
Took you long enough. Jen is supposed to follow the sun to Agura's house? Agura's? He runs into her and she's this old hag who tells him that the three suns are going to line up soon and when that happens, the world might end. Or it will begin. She doesn't know.
I know because I've already seen this movie.
She also, for some reason, has a box of crystals. One of them is the shard that Jen is looking for, but she doesn't know which.
Which one is it?
Don't know.
So Jen narrows down the box of crystals to three shards.
It's one of these three, I'm sure.
What? No, you've never even seen the dark crystal. How do you know it's one of those? Whatever, okay, I can roll with this. Then, if you remember, Jen gets the idea to play his flute at the shard, and then the correct shard just glows for some reason. Why does the crystal react to flute music? That's not a thing. Crystals don't have ears. Now, when you create a fantasy world, you can't explain everything. Sometimes the answer is just, oh, it's magic. In Frozen, they don't explain how Elsa got her ice powers. She was just born with it, okay? It's magic. And the audience is all okay with it, as long as they don't take it too far. But this movie just tries to pull off so much stuff that doesn't make sense. There's a line, and this movie crosses it multiple times. Then the crab people attack Agura's house, Jen escapes with a shard, boom, next day. Okay, I know I've been talking bad about this movie, but the amount of detail in this forest scene is pretty amazing. I mean, it's not doing anything to drive the plot forward, but I just think it's cool to look at. Anyway, back to review mode. Jen falls in the mud, what an idiot, and then he meets up with the... Oh, jeez, that's a girl! That's a girl! So there's a girl Gelfling now. Her name is Kira.
I'll take a potato chip and eat it.
She's speaking gibberish. And then for some unexplained, unimportant reason, when they touch hands, they share memories. I mean, I don't know exactly what happens when you touch hands with another woman. I'm not entirely sure, but I don't think that's supposed to happen.
What's happening?
We're dream fasting, sharing our memories.
I'm having a bath.
Okay, three things. First, this seems like a plot device-y way to just throw in some backstory, but whatever. Second, Jen, you just found out that you're not the last of your species, and when you realize that you're sharing memories with her, you decide to show this person you just met you having a bath. I mean, I guess she did show you her mom dying, so let's just get all that personal stuff out of the way. And third, somewhere on Earth, there exists a baby naked Jen puppet. And I need to have it. Then we're introduced to my third favorite character, Kira's dog, Fizzgig. He doesn't really add anything to the story, he's just that lovable pet slash side character. Hey, that's a lot like my dog.
Hey, Poppy!
Also, Kira can talk to animals.
Poppy!
Okay. Then we're treated to this really great scene. A whole 2 minutes of the Skeksis eating. But honestly, though, I kinda love this scene. It does a great job creeping me out. Okay, it does go on for a minute too long, but bear with me here. The Skeksis' clothing and silverware are Victorian, so it gives off a haunted mansion sort of vibe. And just the character design and the way the Skeksis are eating, it just comes off as unnerving. A lot of movies' scary parts are jump scares or gore. At least I think they do that. I'm not allowed to watch scary movies. But this is such a different way to unease an audience. It kind of reminds me of the first half of a Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared video. Nothing necessarily scary is happening, but it's still able to make the audience feel uncomfortable. Basically, the whole point of this scene was that the crab people were like, hey, we got this old hag, but we didn't get the Gelfling. And then the Skeksis were like, wow, okay, release the crystal bats.
Crystal bats, fly! Search the land, search the water, search the sky!
Okay, this might be nitpicking, and I'm no Gelfling expert, but I think you can rule out searching the sky. I don't see too many Gelflings just flying around. So one of the bats finds Jen and Kira. They go back to Kira's village. Jen doesn't even know where he's supposed to take the shard. His dad never told him what to do after he got the shard. He tells Kira about his quest and what Algura told him.
You know the three suns in the sky? They're going to come together soon. It's called the great something or other.
See, even Jen doesn't remember these made-up names. Really would have been convenient if you told her this information when you were sharing memories. So then the crab monsters show up and basically murder and capture Kira's whole family. Yeah, it was pretty traumatizing. And right when the crab monsters are about to attack Jen and Kira, Chamberlain comes out of nowhere. Remember the guy? He steps in between them and stops the attack, and Kira and Jen escape because Chamberlain saved them. Oh, and then Jen throws away the shard. Boom, next day. Kira finds the shard that Jen threw, and then the two find some hieroglyphics about a prophecy. It says a Gelfling is going to save the world and kill all the Skeksis. It doesn't matter. And then, oh, Chamberlain shows up. Hey, Chamberlain. Hey, guys, I'm sorry for killing your entire species. We just didn't want the prophecy to come to fruition. You understand, right? So what if we all go to the castle together, we can eat some food, and just have a gay old time and talk this whole thing over? What do you think? And then he says, please, a lot.
Please, please, please. Please, yes, please.
Now how can you say no to this lovable guy? He just got kicked out of the Skeksis Club, he's all alone, he just saved you from some crab monsters, and he did say please a lot. I'm just saying, if I was Jen, I totally would have trusted Chamberlain 100%. But instead, Jen just stares at him blankly, and then Kira ruins everything and tells Jen not to trust him, and then they run away.
Wait! Please make peace!
Eh, might have been the right call. So then, for some reason, Kira knows where the castle is, and since she can talk to animals, she calls up these things called Landstriders. They're just a person walking on four stilts, and they ride the Landstriders all the way to the castle. I have a lot of problems with this next scene. So one of the Skeksis takes a podling that they just captured, locks it into a chair, and tells the podling that they're gonna suck its essence away and make it a slave.
Won't hurt. We just want to drain your living essence. Then you can be the same as the other podlings here. A slave.
You know, the podlings don't speak English. They speak a whole different language. The Skeksis is just talking gibberish to this guy while he's just locked in a chair like, what's going on? Like, none of what you're saying is going through this guy's head. And so only the Emperor can drink the essence, and that will make him stay young forever. So what do you need the sun for? And also, what killed the last Skeksis? Looked like old age to me. Yeah, no, that's cool and all, but we get the most terrifying scene in the whole movie. That's right, this is the winner. You gave me the most nightmare scene. You win $1 million. Congratulations, scene! I can go on for hours about how this part of the movie gave me nightmares, but honestly, it speaks for itself. I think what made it worse was that the podling was tied down to the chair and he was just so helpless and his whole face melted off and just... ugh! But now that I'm older, all I can think is, what do you guys need slaves for? So far, the only thing slaves have done was pull on a rope to make some swords appear out of the ground and bring you guys a plate of food. Why is there such a high demand for slaves that you need to make new ones? What do you guys even do all day? Then Kira and Jen arrive at the castle. They see the crab people taking in the pod people from Kira's village. They try and save the podlings, but completely fail. The Landstriders die immediately. Jen and Kira open the cage that the podlings are in, and then the two get cornered. And what are they going to do, you ask? Well, isn't it obvious? They're gonna jump and slowly float down to safety because Kira has wings! That never came up in the memory-sharing bit! So I guess when the Skeksis told the Crystal Bats to search for the Gelflings in the sky, they weren't that far off. Hey, Kira, sorry we left your whole family back there. We totally didn't save them, like, at all. They're probably gonna get turned into slaves now. Okay, we're almost done, everyone. We're getting to Climax Town. Jen and Kira sneak into the castle. Chamberlain's there. He basically murders Jen. And since he captured a Gelfling, he's not an outcast anymore. You guys should have just went with him the first time. Now two Landstriders are dead. Kira goes into the slave room, and as a kid, I was already so traumatized the first time seeing a podling get turned into a slave, and now seeing Kira getting her essence taken away, I lost my mind. Oh, shoot! Kira's getting turned into a slave! Luckily, remember the old hag, Agura? She's like, yo, you can talk to animals, just ask them to help you. Oh, okay.
Kamalea!
She breaks free, and the animals push the Skeksis that was in the room down this pit, and that kills them. Leading up to this point, it's hinted that the Skeksis and the Mystics are, like, connected. When something happens to a Skeksis, there's a Mystic counterpart that experiences the same thing. So when this Skeksis died, there was a Mystic just walking around that just... And none of the other Mystics react.
Yeah, it happens.
Then we see that the Mystics can control the crab monsters. I'm guessing it's because they're connected to the Skeksis, who also can control the crab monsters. So having a Mystic go with Jen on his journey in the first place would have been super helpful back when Kira's village was getting raided. Alright, let's just wrap this up. Vizgig dies, Jen's not really dead, he finds the Dark Crystal, he jumps to it and then drops the shard. Kira has to throw the shard back to Jen, but while she's doing that, she gets murdered. I said spoiler warning, right? And then Jen plops that sucker back into the crystal. The castle crumbles around everyone and the world is saved. But first, the Skeksis and the Mystics walk into each other because they're connected, remember? They become one again, and are you ready for this? They walk into each other and they turn into tree aliens. I'm not even joking. According to the prequels, these things are actually aliens. This is what the whole movie has been building up to. The bad guys are just one half of a schizophrenic alien tree person, and if you read the prequels, you'd know that. Is this supposed to be a plot twist? Because to me, it just seems like a plot is doing whatever it wants. So much weird, unexplained stuff has already happened in this movie, so at this point, I don't even care. By the way, Kira and Vizgig don't actually die. This is a kids' movie, after all. And then the world is saved, even though there's only like 3 people who inhabit it now. The end. So that was the movie. Want to know something funny? I've already used more words in this video than there were words in the entire movie. Also, I need to ask, Jen was supposedly the chosen one.
At this time, Jen is the chosen one.
But I would make the argument that Kira should have been the chosen one. Let me go down my list. She saved Jen from the mud, she sniped a crystal bat out of the sky, when the crab monsters attacked, she had to tell Jen to run, she found the shard on the ground after Jen threw it, she tells Jen not to trust Chamberlain, she knew where the castle was and got the Landstriders to take them there, she used her wings to float Jen down to safety, she was able to get out of being turned into a slave by herself, and she threw the shard back to Jen after his butterfingers dropped it. And how does she get rewarded? By getting stabbed. All Jen did was play his flute at a magic rock. This guy's a doofus. Who chose Jen to be the chosen one? Bad choice. Now, I've said who my second and third favorite character in this movie is, but who's my favorite character? There's only like 3 other characters to choose from, so who could it be? Well, ladies and gentlemen, my favorite character isn't in this movie. My favorite character of the Dark Crystal universe is Rayunip. Agura's son. Okay, I know I just finished the movie, but let me talk about the prequel comics for a minute. Remember Agura, the old lady? Well, turns out she's an immortal being and has been around since the creation of this world. Alright, and one day a meteor hits the planet and she, like anyone else would do, gives life to it. And out pops Rayunip. And he's basically the main character of the prequel books, and is also technically an alien. I like him because he's the only one who questions what's going on. He asks the same questions I'm asking. So he's my favorite, he's the only character I ever wanted to cosplay. If they ever make the prequels into a movie, I call dibs on playing Rayunip, that's how it works. I call dibs on playing this character. I just show up to auditions and I'm like, I actually called dibs, so... Also, in the second book, Agura and her son are having a moment, and Rayunip says, "Will you remember me, mother? After all the harm I caused? I will never forget you, child." Well, you didn't really seem to remember him in the movie. Also, if there's any producers watching, that was my audition just now to play Rayunip. Would I recommend you watch The Dark Crystal? Well, I did just spoil the whole thing, so no, it would be a waste of time at this point. But if I was talking to someone who hasn't watched this video, then yeah, I would recommend it. Even with all of its flaws, I still think it's a creative film and, I don't know, maybe it'd be fun to talk about it afterwards. Maybe I was desensitized doing all this research, but I also enjoyed the prequel comic books. After all, my favorite character's in there. There's also a manga that was made, Legends of the Dark Crystal, and it's supposed to take place in between these books and the movie, so these books don't even bridge the gap between the start of the... It leaves still on a cliffhanger. These books still leave on a cliffhanger. Speaking of manga, there were plans to make a sequel to The Dark Crystal, another movie, but the film ended up getting canceled. But a 12-part comic series is being produced by Boom Studios, and it's not even completed yet. They're only on, like, the second installment. This is recent, you guys, so now is a great time to get into the Dark Crystal fandom. Like I said, I think The Dark Crystal is a creative story. Jim Henson really bit off more than he can chew making this movie, but seeing how many comics have been made to tell this story, maybe The Dark Crystal is told better through comics and not with the limitations of puppets from the 80s. Anyway, that's just what I thought about the movie. This video is going to be a little more educational than usual. Okay, so there's this channel that I used to really like watching called Heart? And I say used to because she doesn't really post that often anymore. She makes videos that combine two of my favorite subjects, math and art.
You like math?
Yes, okay, I like math. So V Heart, I don't know her real name, made videos about math and triangles and transgenderism, and I'm gonna be honest, I've kind of forgotten everything she's talked about. Hexa something, that was one of her things. But every year she's made anti-pi videos. Pi as in the math pi, remember? We're talking about math, not the... Okay, so she posts them every year on Pi Day, which is today. It's Pi Day, if you didn't know that. Let me just tell you something interesting about Pi. In 1949, we started using computers to find Pi, and we kept getting closer and closer as technology advanced, and we never found the true value of Pi, to this day. All those Pi to a million places websites? Nope, not Pi. Yeah, we've gotten really, really close to Pi, and yet, we're nowhere near as close. 'Cause it's infinite. But I mean, it's close enough where you physically can't measure that accurate in the real world. But it's not the true value of pi. The true value of pi goes on forever. And we haven't really gotten to the end of that. Okay, so back to V-Heart. There's a high chance she made a 2016 anti-pi video today, right now. So go check it out. Link in the description, if she's made one. So I guess this is a rebuttal video? About why pi is actually awesome? Oh, and I'm gonna be rebuting her 2014 video because the 2015 one was kinda stupid.
Ah, March 14th, that's just an arbitrary number on a calendar we created, yeah!
Man, shut up. And I actually wanted to make this video back in 2015, but I didn't. Instead, I just made this comic, because last year was hashtag Ultimate Pi Day. So I've actually waited a year now, so I'm excited to talk about it. Let's do it! I hope I'm not breaking any copyright laws by...
This Pi Day, I'm mad about how people worship pi for being infinite, for going on forever. First of all, pi is not infinite.
Well, yeah, it is. But that's not why it's awesome. Every number is technically infinite. You take the number 4 and you add a .0. The 4 is still the same, but in theory you can add a 0 forever, making it technically infinite. And that's just what pi is. It's just a number. It's not infinity. No one's saying that it is.
I know, it's not about its magnitude. It's about all those digits, infinite digits, going on forever. But first of all, it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. That doesn't make it not awesome. It's right there on the number line between 3 and 4. It's just a number, like I said. Y equals pi is just a straight horizontal line. You take the derivative of pi, you get 0. It's a number. It's just a number, man. Just a number.
Pi is a number, not a process.
Yeah, okay, we agree, but that doesn't make it not awesome. The speed of light is just a number. It's about what that super specific number represents.
Secondly, yeah, so it's got infinite digits. So what? 1/3 has infinite digits.
Yeah, but pi is random numbers that go on forever. And there's no pattern. That's what's so cool. Do you know what the trillionth digit of pi is? No, no you don't. It's random digits with no pattern. But I know the trillionth digit of 1/3. Spoiler alert, it's 3.
There's exactly as many digits in 1/3 as in pi, as in 99.999 repeating.
Yeah, the digits of pi are random, but the number as a whole isn't random at all, which is another cool thing. It is the ratio of the diameter of a circle to its circumference. Multiply the diameter by pi, you get the circumference. Are you forgetting that?
There's an infinite number of rational numbers. For any two fractions, you can find another fraction that's between them again and again and again. There's never any fractions that are right next to each other on the number line.
Yes, irrational numbers are technically everywhere. Take the 1,000,000th digit of pi, change it to a 3, and you get an entirely new irrational number. It's not pi anymore. I mean, this was never pi to begin with, but you can't use this to get the circumference anymore. Nuh-uh, not good. But it's this highly specific irrational number that this special ratio occurs. Not this one, this one. It's why we made this specific irrational number its own symbol. Well, okay, we actually used a Greek letter, so it's not totally made up.
So I don't know why anyone would make a fuss about the grand infinities and forevers of a boring little number like pi.
It's not boring.
The only thing even a little weird about pi is that you do get an irrational number by taking such a simple ratio of such a simple geometric object.
Yes, thank you. It's so weird, right?
Surely that never happens with other simple ratios of other simple geometric objects. Oh, wait, they're in everything.
What? No, okay. If you take one of the sides of a square and multiply it by this number, you get the length of its diagonal between the corners. Okay, so this is the ratio of the side of a square and its diagonal. And it's just random numbers that go on forever. Kinda like pi. So why don't we celebrate this number? Why don't we have a special symbol for it like pi? Well, actually we do. It's called radical 2. Look, you just take this number, you square it, you get 2. Just plain old boring 2. That's not special. You can't square pi and get something like 10. You square pi, it's still irrational. Look at this triangle. Same deal, right? This number goes on forever. But wait, it can be written down as radical 3 over 2, just like what you did in the video. Now this one for a pentagon, we do use a symbol for it. It's a Greek symbol called phi. Phi. Phi? That's really close to pi. I wonder if that's on purpose. Now, phi is approximately this number. Kinda like pi, right? Totally 100%ly irrational. I think we got ourselves another pi, but wait! We can rewrite it like this! Hey, side note, this number is considered the golden ratio, and it has to do when we talk about that swirly, like, seashell thing. And it can actually be found in art, so that's pretty cool. Okay, back to pi. You can't rewrite pi like any of these numbers. Pi is its own number. It stands by itself above the rest. It's not radical 2, not rad 3 over 2, but just plain old 3.1415... That's why pi is so awesome. There's a picture going around on the internet that's like, pi contains the day you were born and the day you'll die. If we give the numbers, the letters, and every possible conversation you ever had, and every conversation you didn't have. You see, now that's just stupid. That's just the nature of having random numbers go on forever. I could do the same thing on randomgenerator.org if I just generated a random digit forever. Now what does this mean? Do circles even exist? How can you have a bendy line with just straight lines? What is real? Alright, so just to finish things up, this is all bullcrap. Well, not all of it. Well, yeah, all of it. The reason why pi is actually famous and so beloved is because, let's be real, guys. It's called pi. You don't see people celebrating Pi Day because they appreciate how this irrational number is the ratio between the diameter and its circumference. They're celebrating it because it's called pi. And I think that's what happened to pi. People were like, ah, this boring math term has a funny name. Let's celebrate it on our meaningless calendars.
Pinatas. I love pinatas. It's perfect for when you want to beat something to death, but also want candy.
Why do they make it look so pretty? Most of the time when you're playing with it, it looks like this.
What the, Alex, what are you doing here?
I just wanted to know what it would feel like to have a million subscribers.
No, go, get out. Go back to It's Alex Clark and wait your turn.
Okay, fine.
Don't come back unless you have cake. Pinatas. Here's a story that involved me when I was a first grader in a piñata. I don't know if any of you guys did this in your elementary school, but when it was someone's birthday, that kid would bring treats for the whole class. And then the whole class would take 10 minutes, stop everything they're doing, and then pass out the pastries to everyone. How come we don't do that anymore? In high school, depending on the teacher, they don't do anything for your birthday party. And in college, heck, no one even talks to you. So I have a twin sister, and we were in the first grade together. So when it came time for our birthdays, we had to celebrate two birthdays. It's double birthdays. We gotta do something extra special. My mom had an idea. Let's do a piñata. But since my mom is super cheap, she decided to make her own piñata out of paper mache. And it turns out making homemade piñatas are easy. All you gotta do is blow up a balloon, cover it in paper mache, wait for it to harden, pop the balloon inside, cut a hole open, fill it with candy, cover the hole back up with paper mache, paint it, and then beat it senseless. Simple. So my mom went above and beyond and made a sphere pinata for our entire first grade class. Me and my sister's birthday is towards the end of the school year. In elementary school, that last week of school, like, you don't even do anything. It doesn't even count. So hopefully my teacher wasn't too mad at what was about to transpire. My sister and I were just pumped the whole school day, because we helped build the pinata, we helped paint it, and now we're gonna help beat it to pieces. The teacher eventually called out,
"All right, class, James's mom made us a pinata, so we're all gonna go outside and whack it."
Oh yes, this was perfect! It was our birthday, we gotta beat up a pinata at school, I have the best mom! Me and my sister got a swing first, because we're the birthday boys. We didn't end up breaking it, but I wasn't mad. Let these other non-birthday people have some fun, I'm a generous guy. Hey, in the end, I just want the candy. So the next guy goes up, then the next, and then eventually everyone got a turn. Well, a pinata's supposed to break, ain't it? Apparently, my mom was a little precautious and put a few extra layers of papier-mâché on the pinata, so that way, everyone would get a turn! Yay! And apparently, she also overestimated the strength of papier-mâché and first graders. But did this teacher let the whole class down? No. You know what she did? Bless her soul, she said,
"All right, class, we're all gonna take turns throwing this against a curb!"
I mean, what other option did this teacher have? She could have stabbed it, but I don't think that would have been very fun. Looking back, she might have just been wanting to speed up the process, but as a group of 7-year-olds, we had a blast. Also, I'm glad the pinata was not in the shape of an animal, because imagine how traumatizing that would have been as 7-year-olds to curb stomp a unicorn. We would have been like little tiny mob bosses. All right, Tony, you ready to give up the candy? Such a shame you feel that way, Tony. Bruce? I'm glad my mom was so thoughtful putting all those layers of papier-mâché in the piñata, because we all got a turn throwing the piñata on the ground. I remember getting so into it, I remember jumping up in the air before smashing the piñata onto the pavement. Nothing was going to get in between me and whatever candy was in there. Pretty soon though, we were all getting pretty antsy. Everyone was like, I was promised there'd be candy. Eventually, after what felt like an eternity of beating this piñata into the ground, we got a rip. I don't know if you guys saw the first episode of The Walking Dead, it's actually the only episode I've ever seen, and there's a scene in the first episode where the zombies rip open a horse and eat its organs. Well, that was pretty much what it looked like after we got a rip in the pinata. I don't remember what candy was in there, but hopefully it was worth it. And that was probably the best and worst pinata I ever broke. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that you, yes, you watching this right now, are an introvert. How do I know this? Because you're watching YouTube videos instead of being outside.
What are you doing on the computer? Go outside, so beautiful!
Don't worry, I'm an introvert too. I got an email from an 8-year-old once. He said he liked my videos. It was one of the worst emails I ever got. So I'm just gonna briefly explain what introvert means to all the 8-year-olds watching this. Hey, kids! Are you ready to learn? An introvert is a person who doesn't really like to play with other kids. This doesn't make them sad that they're lonely. They just would rather play by themselves. Think of it this way. Has your friend ever asked you to play with them, but you didn't really want to, so you asked your mom to make up a reason for you not to go? If so, then you're probably an introvert. Or you just need better friends. Me and my mom had a code word, so if a friend was on the phone who wanted to hang out, I would say, "Let me ask my mom." And when I asked her, if I said the code word, it meant, "Mom, make up an excuse so I can't go." I'm not gonna say the code word because I still plan on using it. I actually made a comic kinda similar to this back in 2014, and it's one of my most popular comics, so thanks for liking it. Obviously, it would be one of my most popular comics. I mean, look how great it is. Michael, the creator of Vsauce, hey Vsauce, Michael here, has this new YouTube Red show called Minefield. And as of right now, it's the best YouTube Red series. And in the first episode, Michael goes into an isolation room for 3 days. He has no technology, he's all by himself for 3 days. When I first saw this, I thought, hey, maybe I should try that. Yeah, 3 days of nothing but your own thoughts. I can think of comic ideas, I can write a book, and I don't even have to write any of these ideas down because everything I say is being recorded. This could be my next vacation. Also, speaking of YouTube Red, hey Susan, I heard you had a new spot open for a Red series. I have this great idea called YouTuber Swap. It's like Wife Swap, but with YouTubers. Just hit me up if you're interested. Now, don't get the wrong idea that I'm someone who hates people. I don't. It's just, if we're strangers, then I'd rather not talk to you. Unless you're a stranger who's a fan of my videos. Okay, we can talk about me all day. Bringing up a point from the last video, don't be afraid to talk to me. You know, every YouTuber is in a weird position with their fans, because if you meet me, you already have a pretty good idea of who I am as a person. For instance, you know how long I wet the bed, but for me, I have no clue how long you wet the bed. So, what are we talking about? I'm okay with having a conversation with people, okay? It's just that I'm never the one who starts the conversation. But again, this doesn't apply to fans. I like to think that I'm decent with conversation, but I don't really know how good I am at it. I did fail public speaking. But on occasion, there are times when it's awkward not to talk to a stranger. One time in my college years, I got on an elevator to go to a class and another person got on with me. I live a pretty crazy life, I know. And I did what anyone should do in that situation. I didn't say anything to the other person. But then when we got on our floor, you know how the elevator doors are supposed to open? Well, this time, it didn't. The doors didn't open. This is an introvert's worst nightmare, by the way. And it wasn't one of those elevators that you could fit a king-size bed into. This elevator was about the size of a red box. Is the door gonna open? It seems like it should open by now. What do you do in that situation? You can't not talk to the person you're now trapped with. So, what class are you going to? Physics? Oh, that makes sense, because this is a science building. Enough time had passed where we started looking up the school's number to tell them that we were stuck, which is what you're supposed to do, right? There's not, like, a button on the elevator that you can press to call for help, right? But luckily, while we were doing that, for whatever reason, after a solid 2 minutes, the door decided to open. And just the wave of relief that went over me and this kid. Oh, I thought we'd be in there for hours!
I hope I never see you again.
Same. And that's why I'm never going in an elevator again. It's too risky. I think the problem I have is that I'm bad at starting conversations. Normally, if I'm talking to someone who I don't know, I'll ask, "So, how was your day?" But if your day was anything but good, I don't want to hear it. My dog died. Yeah, they do that. Why is starting a conversation so hard? I only know like 3 good conversation starters. The first one is, "How was your day?" And if that doesn't work, I start talking about all this crazy weather we're having. And in Arizona, there's really only one weather. Hot. Although it did rain like 2 weeks ago. And lastly, if I have nothing else to ask, I hit them with a really hard question. What color is your toothbrush? Mine's red. To start a conversation, sometimes people will ask, what's your favorite blank? I have nothing against these types of questions. I think it tells you a lot about the person you're talking to, but there's one form of this question that I really hate. And it's the question, what's your favorite candy bar? And I hate this question because my favorite candy bar, and I will stick by my answer no matter what you think, is M&M's. It's not a candy bar. Ow! What an astute observation! I'm a very simple man, alright? I like my chocolate pure. Sometimes when people ask this, I think, oh, I should just say Twix. People won't get mad if I say Twix. But then I remember, screw Twix, I like M&M's. But James, why don't you just say Hershey's bar? Because Hershey's makes a mess on your hands and they don't come in a convenient bite-sized pieces, while M&M's hard outer shell improves their overall texture. Why am I even having this argument? I had a friend tell me, well, James, I really like Smarties, but I know they're not a bar, so I don't say they're my favorite candy bar. First of all, dude, Smarties? Really? That's your favorite candy? And second of all, the person asking the question honestly doesn't care what my answer is. Why are you asking such a specific question? You're excluding so much other candy. Candy bars are exclusively chocolate. What if my favorite candy isn't chocolate? What if it's Smarties? Whoa, did you guys see what I just did there? I was talking about M&Ms for like a whole minute. I was having a conversation. All because I was arguing why M&Ms are my favorite candy bar. So that's it. That's how you talk to people. You disagree with everything they say and then argue about it. So everyone watching, argue about your favorite candy bar down in the comments.
What's in the box? I said, what's in the box? I said, what's in the box? I can make a great boat out of this.
So this one time, when I was in the third grade, for some reason our teacher thought it would be a good idea to get his entire class to participate in a cardboard boat race. Cardboard boat racing is this event where teams of people build their own boats out of cardboard and then race against other people's cardboard boats. Now, you might be thinking that cardboard really isn't the best material to make a boat out of. And you're right. But cardboard is cheap, you can get big pieces of it, and they float in the water for a little bit. Perfect for making boats out of. It's good, short-lived entertainment. It's yachts of fun! Apparently, a lot of other schools got their students to do cardboard boat racing. I thought it was just a strange thing my teacher made us do. But if other teachers did it, I guess he wasn't the only weirdo. I don't know what cardboard boat racing is supposed to teach you. Maybe teamwork skills and shipbuilding? I mean, it would come in handy if I was stranded on an island with cardboard and duct tape and I could tell everyone, "Don't worry, guys, I learned how to make boats out of these things in the third grade." But no one else in my school did cardboard boat racing. It was just my class. And I think part of the reason we did this was because the class I was in was an honors class. So, We were better than everyone else.
Guys, I need to tell you about how friggin' smart I am.
So in the second grade, everyone took this test to see if you would get put into the honors class, which, I'm going to be honest, I don't remember taking it. I just remember my mom sitting me and my twin sister down and telling us that we weren't going to be in the same class anymore because I made it into the honors classes and my sister didn't. Haha, loser! The honors program was called DOGS, which stood for DANG! Original Gangsta Students! Okay, that's not actually the name, I made that up. If you got accepted into DOGS, you stayed in the DOGS program for the rest of elementary school. So I basically had the same kids in my class for 5 school years. And our class became known as the DOGS kids. I think since I was in the DOGS program, I wasn't bullied nearly as much as I should have been, because everyone in my class was a huge nerd. Also, I never really learned how to interact with people socially, because I already knew everyone in my class. So all the DOGS were cool with each other, but all the non-DOGS hated us. They thought that us DOGS thought that we were so much better than them, and we were. Now, call me old-fashioned, but I think the third grade is a little too soon to tell if you're smart or not. I would say that the DOGS program did not make me a smarter person. I don't speak for everyone, this was just my experience, but in high school, my twin sister was a way better student. High school didn't have the DOGS program, so me and my sister were in the same classes again, and she was a straight A student while I was about a straight B and C student. So all the math I've learned is telling me that something's not adding up. It probably had nothing to do with being in the honors program in elementary school. I probably just procrastinated a lot in high school. Okay, now let's get back to the actual topic of the video. Leading up to the event, the teacher wanted us to stay after school to help make the boats, and I, being the loyal dog that I was, stayed after school exactly 0 times. Sorry dudes, I take the bus home, and last time I missed the bus, my mom got mad at me and I cried. And she had to pick me up. So actually, if I was deserted on an island, I wouldn't be much help. I would have to get my mom to pick me up. This event was at a medium-sized man-made lake in Arizona, because we don't have real lakes, they're all man-made. And it was right next to a college, and a lot of college kids like to get drunk there. We ended up making 2 boats. One was white, and one was blue with a dragon head at the front and a tail in the back, and they both could hold 10 people. There wasn't enough room for everyone in the class to get a spot on the boat, and the kids who actually helped build it got a reserved seat. But since I was a scrawny white boy that didn't take up much space, I got to sit in the very front, because they were the coolest and smallest seats. The person who I sat next to was this girl named Priscilla. I still keep in contact with her, and I asked if I could say her name in this video, and she said yes. Later in life, she was the first girl to ever slap me. I didn't ask permission to tell that story. While we were waiting for our turn to race, my dad got me a snow cone, and that snow cone was the very first time I remember getting a brain freeze. It hurts to eat this. Yeah. They do that. When it was our turn, we rowed the boat out and we actually stayed afloat. I mean, it was only a couple inches away from sinking, but it worked. My mom told me beforehand that if the boat sunk, I should kick off my shoes because that would weigh me down and I would drown. Thanks for the vote of confidence, Mom! And I remember being so afraid of the boat sinking. Not because I could drown, but because I didn't want to lose my shoes. So there we were, a bunch of 8-year-olds in a glorified cardboard box, on a lake, with 3 other boxes filled with drunk college students. The course we had to take was pretty simple. It only had 2 left turns. Should have been a piece of cake. And we were doing pretty good until we had to make the first left turn. We messed up on that part. We practiced turning on land all the time. But for some reason, when we were in the water, our turning maneuver wasn't working. We kind of just drifted forward. We were pretty much all stranded. We didn't know how to drive this thing, and we were running out of time since the cardboard doesn't last that long when it's wet. But there were these lifeguards / helper people going around in canoes, and one person came up to our boat and he just kind of pushed it with his paddle and he turned the boat, and we were back in the race. Well, actually, by this point, everyone else had already completed the course. But we were still floating. We were still gonna finish this. When it came time for the second turn, the same thing happened. We didn't learn anything. They never taught us this in honors classes. By this point, the next 4 people racing just went. They got tired of waiting. And while the canoe boat guy was trying to teach us how to turn, the other boats just passed us. Eventually, we did get the turning thing down and we made it back to shore. The boat stayed up the entire time. Out of the 4 people we raced against, we came in 8th. I kinda wish something bad did happen. Like the boat flipped over or a shark ate one of the kids. That would have been a better YouTube video. But that also would have been lying. And then afterwards, the president came down and high-fived all of us. And to prove I'm not lying, here's some pictures of me in front of the boat. We had to take the dragon head off because it didn't fit with all of us, but we kept the tail. And you'll also notice how cramped the seats are and the girl who later on slaps me. Here's a boat with a roof. Here's a picture of the snow cone that gave me my first brain freeze. Here's us in the water next to a pretty big boat. And look, our other white boat is getting blocked blocked off by the bigger boat. Notice how our boat is going in the wrong direction and how close we are to being submerged. And here's a picture of the grown-ups carrying the boat out of the water after a long day. And I'm not in this picture. I wanted to get to land as soon as possible. Here's a picture of me during Halloween. I dressed up as a ninja. I think it was the Halloween after the bunny. And there's a plushie of a Neopet in the background. Do you guys remember Neopets? All my Neopets are probably dead now. Here's a picture of me with a giant pencil. It's actually a model rocket, but it looks like a pencil. Isn't that adorable? Remember my science fair video where I launched rockets? Yeah, this wasn't that time. This is a completely different model rocket. And here's me in a tub of animal plushies. And this bird plushie right here was actually my favorite. I got them from someone else's birthday. It was in a goodie bag. It was a pirate-themed birthday. So it was like, you know, a little tiny parrot. I really liked that bird. His name was Birdie, and now he's gone. And here's me dressed up as Galileo. Yay, a new video is done. Sorry it's been like a month since my last. I understand that there are things that I don't understand. For example, theoretical physics, or how to make friends. But I do know that the world is not flat, that vaccines work, and listening to people tell me otherwise is admittedly a guilty pleasure of mine. Whether it's conspiracy theories or horoscopes, I love watching people pour their heart into something they genuinely believe in, only for me to go, "I disagree." But please, continue. There are some beliefs that I don't agree with, but are absolutely fine to believe in, like thinking bucket hats look good on someone. But I think we can all agree that some beliefs can be incredibly damaging to a person, or even humanity as a whole, like the anti-vaxxers. Or racists. So I discovered a new trend, and I'm not sure if it's just kids being kids or a mentally damaging belief system, but I'm still gonna talk about it and explain to my audience the importance of critical thinking and to notice the red flags and dangerous beliefs. So, what am I talking about? I unfortunately fell down a rabbit hole and discovered a community of mostly kids on a phone application called TikTok doing something called reality shifting. This, by the way, is not a small community of like 20 people. There are amino groups with thousands of members, videos with hundreds of thousands of views, and they have their own acronyms. OMG. Reality shifting stems from the belief in parallel universes, which, I gotta be honest, I'm not completely sold on that idea to begin with. You say that Schrodinger's cat is both alive and dead, but cats have 9 lives, so are 4.5 cats dead? How is a cat half dead? Either way, someone supposedly very smart has said that every decision you've ever made has caused the universe to copy itself and create a new reality where you made the different decision. I had cereal for breakfast this morning, but somewhere there's a reality where I ate my hamster for breakfast. Does that mean I create a new universe every time I scratch my butt, and somewhere there's a James with better manners? So times that by 8 billion people making decisions every day, plus the decisions made by, like, dogs and jellyfish, right? Those count, I think. And we get roughly infinity total realities. If you've seen Endgame, you know what I'm talking about. The reality shifting community says that since there are infinite realities, then there's a reality where GameStop stock is incredibly low, or that COVID didn't happen. Or perhaps there's even a reality out there where Hogwarts is real, and a messenger owl just dropped off your acceptance letter. And through the right meditation, you can transfer your consciousness from your current reality, your CR for short, to your Hogwarts desired reality, your DR. And for some gosh darn reason, Hogwarts is the number one shiftable destination location. But obviously, it's not just Hogwarts. Any fictional universe is fair game. You could go to the Hunger Games or Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure why, though. A lot of bad things happen there. And since all logic is thrown out the window, cartoon and anime realities are shiftable destinations. Because if Schrodinger's cat taught us anything, it's that there are some universes that are just 24 drawings a second. So because there are allegedly infinite realities, people will write down what they want their desired reality to be, and this is called a script. It's funny, you know, normally scripts are made to tell fictional stories, but these people think that what they write down will be 100% real. And you can make a script of whatever you want. You can say, "I want to shift to Hogwarts and be in a relationship with Draco Malfoy." I mean, not me, this is just an example. Now listen, you're a smart kid, okay? Hopefully, I don't have to explain to you that that's not how life works. If you believe you can hop into different realities, then that's great and I see no problem with it. Is what I would say in a different reality, but in this reality, I have a lot of questions. If you can shift your consciousness into a different version of you, what happens to the alternate reality you's consciousness? You're just taking over someone else's body. This other you had a life and a family, unless you're going to a YA fantasy novel, and you just took over their whole body. What if there's a you in an alternate reality that's like, I want to live in a reality where there's a pandemic and I'm sadder, and then they shifted here? What happens to your consciousness? You don't trade. The reality shifting community says that when you shift, you leave behind a clone of yourself. Obviously. So when you shift, there's someone's consciousness unaccounted for. What about the realities where one of you had waffles for breakfast and the other had pancakes? Both of these yous are pretty much the exact same. So then both of you will want to reality shift to the exact same Harry Potter reality. Do you have to share a body with the other yous that have shifted to the same reality? Are you telling me that Voldemort and any fictional villain is real? How come half of us didn't get turned to dust when Thanos snapped? If anyone can reality shift, are you telling me there's a chance that Voldemort could download TikTok and reality shift here? If you go to Hogwarts, you're leading Voldemort right to us. How can there be a reality where magic is real? Sure, I don't know how parallel universes work, but they're parallel, so the laws of physics should still be the same, right?
But James, I know that reality shifting makes no sense and is impossible, but then why do so many people claim to have shifted?
Because they're dreaming. Shifting happens when you fall asleep, and if you fill your subconscious with things from your desired reality, would you be surprised that you had a dream about Hogwarts? Something about this trend doesn't sit right with me. A lot of the reality shifting TikToks were done by kids, and kids, as you know, can get really obsessed in a fandom and do some cringy stuff. If these kids were making fanfiction and writing themselves on a date with Bakugo, that would be totally fine. Healthy even. Heck, even if these kids flat out said, I love Harry Potter so much that I want to manipulate my dreams to be about him, that would be fine too! But something about actually believing that you're astral projecting into a fictional universe? I don't know, that level of obsession just feels unhealthy, my guy. And also, back off Bakugo, he's mine. The problem with reality shifting and actually conspiracy theories as a whole is that they pretend to be based on factual evidence when they're entirely a pseudoscience. You start off with a scientific idea, multiple realities, and then you make up whatever you want and use what the scientists have said about multiple realities as proof. Even though no scientist has said anything about being able to move your consciousness outside of your body, or that you leave a clone of yourself behind when you reality shift, or that cartoon universes exist. I've seen people in videos say that they've done research on reality shifting, but I feel confident in saying you didn't get a degree in quantum physics. I want you to cite your sources and show me the studies, because research isn't just believing what other people said on TikTok. These TikToks get impressionable kids to believe in reality shifting in pretty manipulative ways, saying that if you didn't shift, it's because you didn't believe hard enough. When you get these doubts and say, oh, I can't shift, I don't even know if it's real anymore at this point, try and ask yourself after, but what if it's real? What if I can shift? You want to find out, do you? I get it. Harry Potter is a cool world. That's why they made a whole theme park about it. Who wouldn't want to drop out of a Muggle public school and live in a castle with a bunch of soft British boys? And also magic or whatever. But you need to be mindful about where you're getting your information. I've watched hours of flat earthers and anti-vaxxers talk about their beliefs, and these people get their information from non-credible sources, and they end up pushing more fake information online, and it creates this echo chamber that warps their worldview. I don't want kids watching these TikToks or going on Amino and essentially get lied to and think this is how the world works. I'm hoping that all of these people will look back at themselves in 10 years and go, yeesh, I can't believe I was so obsessed about a thing, I literally tried to astral project myself across the multiverse. Right, Bakugo? I know that this reality can suck sometimes, and right now it's looking pretty bad. But like it or not, this is the one reality we get. A lot of things may be out of your control, but according to theoretical physics, we make a lot of choices, and all our choices lead us down different paths. So what you need to do is not give up on this reality for a literal fictitious one, but instead to make choices that will make this current reality your desired reality. Thank you all for coming to my TED Talk.
Hey man, have you ever noticed that we wear the exact same clothes every day? We don't
we don't wear any clothes. What if we're both just a cartoon character, and that's why our clothing's the same? That's impossible. Cartoon characters' mouths move. We just open our mouths and words start coming out. Hey, guys. Did you see my brand new Rolex? Are you jealous? Doesn't your phone tell the time? Maybe he never noticed that his phone has a clock in it. No one buys a Rolex to tell the time. I can't even read this. People buy Rolexes to indirectly tell everyone how much money we can throw away on useless objects. Hey, look what my watch can do. Ring, ring. Hello? You'll never believe what Brian just bought. What'd he buy? A watch. Really? What a nerd. Oh, Brian. I'm the kind of person who doesn't really care about my outward appearance. A lot of times in high school, we talk about having a healthy self-image of ourselves, and teachers would say stuff like, "Don't listen to the people who call you ugly. You're beautiful." And all I could think was, there's people saying I'm ugly? For the most part, I haven't really tried to even learn anything about fashion. Most of the time when I get dressed in the morning, I wear just whatever's the cleanest. Like, I don't even know my pant size because I wear basketball shorts all the time. I think I'm a medium. My parents taught me the value of hard work by making me pay for all my clothes, and I am 100% on board with that parenting technique. I think even the super, super rich parents should still make their kids buy their own clothes. Because if you just buy your child anything they want, then they're going to turn into a-holes who just expect everything without having to work hard. Those are the types of kids who grow up to flex all their money on people and who leave their basketball cards all over the cramped dorm. And also, buying your own clothes makes you think harder about what you're going to spend your precious dollars on. You don't want to waste your money, so you have to pick clothes you really like. Except my mom told me I couldn't buy anything with skulls on them. She said they were too edgy. And you know what? Fair enough, Mom. Looking back, I'm glad I skipped that emo edgy phase. But why didn't you let me express my true self, Mom? Thank you for not letting me do that. In the seventh grade, I went through an I need to look cool phase. And one time, I saved up quite a bit of money, so me and my mom went on a shopping spree at Kohl's, hashtag not sponsored. I was going to impress everyone. I was going to look so cool with my brand new two pairs of jeans. I'll get this normal blue pair, and then the exact same pair, just in case I spill ketchup on the first pair. That's another reason why I'm pro have your kids pay for their own clothes. So that way they learn how expensive clothes shopping is. Seriously, two pairs of jeans was $70. Do you know how many Pokemon cards I could have bought? Probably enough to make my own pair of PokePants. And that's when I learned about the magical land of Goodwill. At Goodwill, you could buy mediocre, questionably stained-looking jeans for a fourth of the price of Kohl's. And since I had to buy all my clothes and I was unemployed, I was at Goodwill every other Saturday for that half-off deal. You're at Goodwill and everything's half-off. That's like a double sale, people. Here's the thing. Typically, clothes stores have a certain style they specialize in. Tilly's, you know you're gonna get that hip LA-style clothes. At Old Navy, you know you're gonna get that white boy Ohio look. And H&M, you know you're gonna get demonetized. But when you step inside your local Goodwill, you don't know what you're getting. You get every style of clothing all in one place. I got my favorite t-shirt from Goodwill. I even wore it to this panel at VidCon. You know, the panel where I didn't even talk into the microphone, so you couldn't hear half the words I said.
Ah, but James, I don't want to wear clothes that have already been worn by other people. They are gross. Ugh, cuties and herpes.
Ugh. Yeah, no, that's true. You don't know who else has worn your clothing. But then again, you could be wearing something that was also worn by the odd ones out. Yeah, that's right. I donate my clothes to Goodwill. Reduce, reuse, recycle, baby. Why would someone make a pair of pants out of Pokemon cards and give it away? I'm not saying don't buy expensive clothing. Buy whatever you want to buy and can't afford. If there's two shirts, one is $40 and one is $5, and you really, really like the $40 shirt and hate the $5 one, you should get the $40 shirt because you'll end up wearing it more often, so you get more use out of it. In economics, there's a term used to measure how much happiness a product will give you, and it's called utils. Sometimes buying more expensive things will give you more utils of happiness, so it's worth it to buy expensive clothing. But for me, I get way more utils buying a shirt for $5. You cannot put a price on all the oodles and oodles of utils I get for wearing a shirt I like for $5. You can wear your Supremes and your Abercrombos or whatever all you want. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense spending that much money on a white t-shirt with an ironed-on logo. There's no material in that shirt that makes it as expensive as it is. Oh, never mind. What you're really doing is paying for the name brand. So you might as well staple two $20 bills to your shirt and write in Sharpie, "Look everyone, I got $40. But again, if you like the design of a white shirt and a red rectangle, then you be happy wearing it. I'm not telling you what to wear. But I will tell you this. Don't judge someone based on their clothing. That's like the most shallow thing a person can do. Even if someone is wearing old hand-me-downs or a really expensive name brand t-shirt, don't treat people differently because of their clothing. There's a certain YouTuber going around, I'm not going to say any names, but I will draw pictures, who's teaching kids that their value as a person is correlated to the amount of money they spend on clothing. Don't do that. Okay, real talk over now. School uniforms! People who support school uniforms say that uniforms are better because then the students don't have to think about what they're going to wear the next day because everyone has to wear the same outfit. But like, I already don't think about what I'm wearing. That's probably why I'm naked right now. Okay, that's not entirely true. I'm not just going to walk outside wearing a pink poncho. I have standards. I just buy all the cheap clothing I think looks nice. In high school, I mostly wore solid color V-neck t-shirts, and one time a kid on the very last day of school told me, "James, you always wear solid color V-neck t-shirts. You're like a cartoon character." That's what I'm going for. I've always wanted to be a cartoon. I don't think you realize how much I love cartoons. One time I bought those shoes with the really fat tongues. I thought they looked cool, but they certainly didn't feel cool. They didn't have any support for my soul. I couldn't go running in them, so what was even the point? And apparently you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes. I'm not sure. Someone just told me, "Hey man, you know you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes, right?" So I had to bury the laces inside my shoe, and I was constantly stepping on the sharp aglets! And all the cool kids saw my shoes and said, "Hey James, those are some pretty fat tongues you got there. Do you want to come sit at our lunch table?" And I said, "No, being cool sucks!" So now I wear tennis shoes everywhere. Some of you watching are in 7th or 8th grade right now, and you might be going through your own I need to look cool phase. And I just want to say to you little youngins, you don't need to impress or prove yourself to anyone. Wear whatever makes you happy, and that you can afford. And you still have to follow the school's dress code, which is a whole other can of worms. I'm not encouraging anyone to break the rules, okay? All I'm saying is, at the end of the day, what really matters is that you're in 7th grade. Nothing you do will make you cool. I'm sorry, everyone regrets 7th grade, okay? Just start putting on deodorant, do the homework, you'll get through this.
I'm sort of stealing this idea from Jaden Animations.
Wait, no, that's not right. I'm not stealing it. I'm plagiarizing it.
Jaden did a video talking about random thoughts she had, and you should all go watch it. And I thought, hey, I think randomly sometimes. So Jaden, is it alright if I make a video about my random thoughts? I hope you say yes, because I just did. What is happiness? Well, it's a chemical in your brain. And how do you get that chemical? Well, it's just a little something I like to call drugs. I think humans make fun of hairless animals way too much. We think that all hairless animals are ugly. Just go to Google Images and type in hairless animal, and you'll probably think the animals you see there are ugly as well. But we all seem to forget that we're hairless animals too. If anything, other animals should think that we're ugly. So I look at this phenomenon and I have a theory. I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry. My dad never taught me how to shave, and one time I cut myself shaving right above my lip, and for the rest of the day, all I could smell was blood. I don't know why I mentioned the dad part. You know how websites will ask you to type in a bunch of misshapen letters to make sure you're not a robot? That's called a CAPTCHA. And some of those CAPTCHAs are impossible. Sometimes I look at a CAPTCHA and think, am I a robot? I just wanted to send some email. I didn't want to question my identity. I wasn't ready for an existential crisis, Club Penguin. Sorry, that joke is dead. Just like Club Penguin. So here's the random thought. What if we lived in a robot society and robots had to prove that they weren't human to make a Facebook account? I think their CAPTCHA would be an optical illusion. Like, to sign into a website, it'll show two lines and say, "Prove you're not a human, which line is bigger?" Optical illusions are like CAPTCHAs for people. Every time you paint a room, it gets a little bit smaller. And if it takes you one can of paint to paint an entire room, then the room gets smaller by one can of paint. You brought a can of paint inside the room, and you never took it out. Every time you smell something, molecules from that thing get sucked up into your nose, and that's how you're able to smell it. So that means every time you smell something, it gets a tiny bit lighter. Do archaeologists have lingo and jokes that only other archaeologists will understand? Like, there's a whole other world of jokes that I won't get to experience because I'm not an archaeologist. Like, one day, two archaeologists could be digging a hole, and one says,
I'm not finding anything. And then the other guy says, well, you know what they say in the archaeology business. And I don't know what they say because I'm not an archaeologist. How about we look up jokes for archaeologists? Why did Robin Hood pull out of the archery contest? He found it an harrowing experience. Okay, get that one? It just wasn't that funny. Nor was it about archaeology. Or maybe it was, and I just don't get it.